council meeting. This is the council meeting for January 30th, 2018. The time right now is 5:30 p.m. And this is our retreat and workshop. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Kubek, Gamble, Hanford, Camp, and Scarborough.
Thank you. We heard earlier this evening that Councilmember Davis regrettably can't make it. He's out sick. And we had heard last week or the week prior that Councilmember Rasmussen would not be able to make it here this evening due to a work conflict. So without objection, we consider both of them as being excused absences. Councilmember Hanford, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So the first thing that we're going to do this evening is we're going to adjourn. We're going to take a recess. The reason for this is that on our agenda this evening, one of the things that we anticipate talking about is the council chambers and city hall alternatives. And I feel that it would be of value for the council members to see the shop, which is a contemplated alternative for there to be a council chamber. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and recess. There will be no action taken while we're on this field trip, if you will. What do we call it? Did we actually call it a field trip?
Tour.
A 3-hour tour.
There will be no action occurring on this tour. It'll be certainly shorter than 3 hours. So we'll be back here probably about 15 minutes or so. Members of the public and directors are more than welcome to join us. So, your
inquisitors. And it's never even seen
We're now back on record and in session. Thank you all very much for going out and taking a look at the shop. The time right now for the recording is 5:40. And the first item we have on our agenda then is discussion item number one. This is AB 18-022, long-range budget assumptions finance. And
we've been talking about this for a while. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So basically, this particular memo with a few changes should not be new for our members of the Finance Committee. This is part of what we started to review back earlier this month. As we talked about, I'm not going to read the memo to you since it was in your packet, but basically, good prudent financial planning, you usually want to try and do at least a 5-year projection on your general fund revenues. That's your main fund for the city, it's your operations fund. It's kind of just a good idea to see where we're headed, what road we're headed down. Now, one caution I've always given every jurisdiction that I've worked with is that when we create these models that all these assumptions would feed into, a lot of times they will show red in the last few years. And in fact, I'm very surprised if they don't. Given that your taxes and your general fund revenues are mostly derived from taxes and you have statutory limitations on what can be collected for taxes, especially property taxes, which tends to be one of your larger revenues. When you're capped at 1% IPD, and there was actually a few years during the recession where IPD was negative, when your income can only go up by that amount, and yet your expenses traditionally go up whatever CPI is, which is usually 3% is a good rule of thumb, you have an inherent conflict already built in. So anytime you're doing long-range projections,
it's going to drive me nuts. If you're going to use acronyms, I'm going to get lost real fast. So.
No, and thank you for calling
CPI,
me
I knew, but I think that's possible.
So IPD is in implicit price deflator. Mm-hmm. And what that is, and we actually talk about that a little bit later in the memo, is it's similar to CPI. It's an inflationary type benchmark that is done not by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it does CPI, but it is done by, I always forget which one it is, economic analysis. The reason IPD is important to cities is that after referendum 47, it limits, if your population is more than 10,000 in if your city is more than 10,000 in population, your property tax increase is limited to either 1% or the IPD, whichever is lower. So that's why IPD all of a sudden became a critical factor for cities to know. So that's what I mean when I'm referring to IPD. But back to just kind of the general framework. Again, you know, when your IPD tends to be only round, or you're capped at 1% with one of your major revenue streams, yet your expenses tend to go up faster than that, there is an inherent conflict in what can happen for longer range projections. So that's why most finance directors are not surprised when you see red in the out years. Again, the caution I always give people is that doesn't mean that's where we're going to end up. It's just a roadmap. It's for planning. The analogy I always like to use, because one of the cities I used to work for, is that it's like being on an aircraft carrier. If you know you're going to need a course change, or you know you're going to have to make a turn down the road, you can't turn on the dime in something that large. So you want to start making your course changes ahead of time. That's the power of having a five-year projection with regards to your general fund. But the projection is only as good as the assumptions that we put in it. And so that's what we want to talk about tonight, is what assumptions that we are recommending that we use as we build this model, and how, if you guys feel that what we're talking about is reasonable, or as the Finance Committee found, there was an additional item that we could look at that we did incorporate in here that pretty much just reaffirmed one of the assumptions that we are using. So that's kind of the introduction to what we're doing here tonight. Now, just so you guys know, once we are comfortable and we have some agreements on what these assumptions are going to be, we are going to then start building the model and using the 17 actuals and 18 budget to then start projecting what it looks like we're going to be over the next 5 years, so that then maybe that can help you guys as you're dealing with policy decisions throughout the year. So we'll be bringing that model back to you probably closer to mid-year. So the first one, and this is just like when we were doing the 18 budget, we always look at what our population increases have been over the last few years. As we saw, or as you can see in the memo, it's been pretty steady. We haven't really grown too quickly out here, but it does look like it's starting to pick up. Having said that, with everything that we're reading about what's going on in the greater metropolitan area and with growth management, even though 1.26% looks like it's quite large compared to historical numbers, we do feel that that is still conservative, and we do want to be conservative when we're putting these assumptions into the model. So we're recommending using the 1.6, and that's an assumption or a growth factor that we would use on things like sales taxes. The idea being that, you know, more people are moving into town, that's more people that are shopping here. So we should see our sales taxes increasing by that amount. For the police department, that also includes their 0.1%, as well as the criminal justice sales tax that we get as a state shared revenue. There's also utility taxes. Our utilities should be growing in a similar manner. If we've got that many more people here, ideally that's that, you know, there's a certain amount of new households that will also be then buying our utilities. And then we turn around and we do get a 10% utility tax on our water utility that goes into the general fund. I would say admissions taxes, because we do have a movie theater in town, but then again, you know, there's other trends going on with, you know, people aren't going to see movies as much as they used to, because it's getting too easy to be at home with a big screen like this to watch a movie, so that one's kind of a little bit more hit and miss. But there's things like our cable franchise fees are still pretty healthy. They tend to attract the population as well. So unless I hear objections, or if there's anything else, or Mr. Mayor, you want to interject at this point, or
any questions, comments?
For comfort level with using 1.26%? And then just so you know, when we were talking about this at the Finance Committee, there was a question with regards to how have our active utility accounts been increasing over that same period. So that's what the second table is here. And while the numbers are a little bit more volatile than what property taxes were, the trend is somewhat the same. There is one outlier there, and I tend to, if I only see one outlier, I tend to throw that out. And with throwing that out, the growth in utility accounts is pretty much on par as far as from a trending standpoint, similar to what we were seeing with population. So that kind of, in my mind, reinforces that that 1.26% is a good assumption to use. It's a nice conservative assumption. And the reason we don't necessarily want to use the higher percentage that we're seeing with the utility accounts is, again, the lower percentage is a little bit more conservative. And then also we have a number of utility accounts that are for builders. That doesn't necessarily mean that the population in town is buying at our stores or et cetera. So
is that what I didn't totally get? What was the utility once you... What's the volume there, I guess, from a builder's perspective?
That I don't know. We didn't get into it to that degree. So, at this point,
are you saying that they're paying for the individual lots?
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, so when they buy...
It would be logical then that those... Maybe it's... So they're paying and it's registering in that year, but the actual houses that are going on those lots are going to be dispersed as far as occupants?
So when it, so and Brad, if you want to jump in at any time on this one, the way it, I've always understood it to work is that when a builder comes in and they buy that meter to have it connected at the lot, that becomes an active utility account at that point. Whether they're running water through it or not, they're paying the minimum, the minimum charge. So that's going to show up in my active account numbers for utilities. Where it's not going to show up is obviously you don't have occupants in that building yet. There's no C of O. It hasn't been sold. So even though there's an active utility account, I don't have people who could conceivably come and eat in the restaurants downtown or over at Lake Tai or are shopping at Lowe's or Fred Meyer's.
I get that. But what I'm saying, what in the memo or what you're saying is that doesn't equate. But it actually does once a home or the home is built.
Correct.
Right. So it's... It may register in that fiscal year or in that year, mm-hmm. but the actual occupants will, some may come in during that year or may leave
or a future year.
I'm just trying to, I get what you say, you throw an outlier out. In my experience, sometimes that can be dangerous because
right.
there may be something there. I'm just wondering if that 7.73 that was there, is that, did we just have a, you know, so we had that pent up where there was an inventory shortage and then we just had a bunch of, no, not move in, but a bunch of properties that basically, hey, we bought, they bought all the rents and been activated.
Yeah.
And
we didn't dig into the details to that extent. So. And for the purposes of building this model,
yeah.
Yeah. So, again, you know, we could do that, but if we want to stay more conservative, we have good numbers to use for that. So. So then another big, as you know, with general fund, we're a service agency, so a big chunk of our expenses have to do with salaries and benefits. That usually, actually I've seen some cities where that is as high as 70%, 70 to 75% of your general fund. We are not that high here in Monroe, so that indicates to me we run very lean. But having said that, it is one of our larger pieces as far as expenses go out of the general fund. So we look at, you know, a lot of our employees are on collective bargaining agreements. Their wage increases tend to be tied to CPI. This is where we talk about CPI and IPD. CPI over the last couple of years has been, well, actually it's 17 that drives 18 wages, was 3%. So we're recommending to be conservative on the expenditure side that we go with 3% in the out years. As far as benefits go, during the recession, we were seeing double-digit increases in the cost of medical, and medical is the biggest chunk of the benefits that we pay for our employees. Dental over the last few years has actually been much more moderate, if it increases at all, and we have actually been fortunate in that the last 2 years, we have not seen increases in the medical premiums. As well, HR here has done a fabulous job of, quite frankly, keeping us off the high-cost Cadillac plans, as the ACA would call it. So there, I also don't have to worry about factoring in a rate increase with regards to the Cadillac tax that they keep, that the feds keep deferring on us. So, having said that, our recommendation to be conservative is to go with the 3% over the 5 years as far as the wage escalator, and then also to use 10% as an escalator for the medical costs, for the benefit costs.
Councilmember Stone, any thoughts on the 3% that's being recommended?
Does the 3% include retirement and all that, the wage increase, or is that included in the 10% benefit, or the 10% just medical?
The 10% is for medical, dental, life insurance.
Disability, maybe?
Yeah, disability. As far as retirement goes, yeah.
I mean, I would think that would be, how big of an amount is that for the city? Got people that have been here a long time.
So are you talking retirement in as far as the amount we contribute towards PERS and less?
Is that included in the 3 or in the 10 or not included at all?
It is included as part of the 3.
Okay.
Yeah. Because the payments that we make to LEP and to PERS are a percentage of the salary that we pay the employees.
Right.
So. Okay.
But as salaries increase, that increases.
Correct.
Because it's a higher amount of paying percentage.
Correct. For some reason I was thinking you were thinking we were paying actual pensions to folks.
So no, just as salaries increase, we're paying more into the retirement funds, our portion as your employer. Right?
Yes, that's part of the 3%.
But that's factored in,
correct? Yes. Mm-hmm. Just like with Social Security, Medicare, there's a portion that the city pays as well as the employees, so it's all factored in. So the 3% is against the gross wages. So.
Okay, that seems maybe to me to factor in all the taxes and all that stuff that you pay, and then still averages 3%. I mean, salaries on its own averaging 3%, I get that, but then when you add in all the taxes you pay per employee in retirement, that almost seems like that's a... So I don't know.
And I understand your logic and where you're coming from with that. All I can tell you is that from experience, it all tends to wash.
Yeah.
Between the benefits and the salaries, it usually tends to come out about where, because then you'll have salaries that are set. We've got staff that has been here for a number of years,
right?
So they're all at the top of the pay scale, and so as you get turnover, you're going to have people coming in theoretically a little bit lower on the pay scale. That tends to all wash as part of it too. So
right.
And again, with a model like this. You know, the idea is you're painting broad strokes. So you're not getting so into the fine tune like you do with an annual budget. Again, it's just meant to be kind of a planning and a roadmap of where you might head. So.
That's our roadmap. Any other council members, questions, comments? Councilor Gamble, were you're on the Finance Committee. Who else is on the Finance Committee? Okay. Any feedback from the Finance Committee and the recommendation for the 3%?
No, I mean, what we talked about as we went through the pre-trust, just how is very refreshing. A lot of us are very used to looking at a 3-year, you know, 3-5-year plan out, and this just... It just seems like we're doing the right thing here to look out. And again, I just reiterate what Becky was saying, that's what we were talking about on the side. You're building in those operational costs that you can kind of foresee. You know, retirements, I might see that a year in advance with, you know, the finance director, you know, in 4 to 8, 6 months from now, I'm going to retire, but I don't know 3 years out. So you build in those, you know, just kind of those operational, you know, costs based off, you know, the trends and statistics. The other thing was that we talked about too is sometimes when you're doing this is that a lot of times you're basing it on past and not what's, you know, right in front of you. So if you think of it like from this perspective, if we would have built this right before Walmart went live, you know, our projections would have been completely out of whack from a sales revenue.
See, out of whack would be considerably more, correct?
Correct, okay. Because it's, you know, that hasn't, it hasn't occurred, that trending activity was not realized before, when you know it's going to happen. So those are some of the things we'll often talk, we want to review on a regular basis as we look at our projections. 3 to 5 years out, we're saying, hey, is there anything imminent that Wayne Allen's going to hit that could potentially change these? But that's also the reason why you go conservative. And I think that's exactly what we've done here.
Now, 3% is conservative. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the case of your new staffing or new employees or something, a major expense that you anticipate or that you are aware is going to happen in a short amount of time, then you would increase that.
No,
we don't have anything like that. Or
what I was speaking to is what Councilmember Cutterback had brought up, is that, hey, were you factoring in retirement?
Right.
Mickey was speaking to that, you know, hey, that's, it kind of washes because you got to, you know, because she's talking about paying the taxes on, you know, on the retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you were talking
no,
about?
No, I was talking about just taxes. I mean, every employee incurs, you pay the salary, and then you have all the taxes you have to pay, and then there's retirement, and then there's benefits, which break down. Benefits, they said we were assuming 10% would change reasonable for the medical and dental. And
mm-hmm. all the rest of it would jump in.
But then you have those itemized taxes you pay per employee to the state and the others, and then retirement. So when I do my budget, the 3% increase in salary, wash it out, because that's the average for the whole entire.
Party.
So you have some making more than 3, some making less, depending on contracts and all that. But you have those additional costs of what you pay into retirement, what you pay in taxes, and if you, it's usually, for us, it's a pretty substantial
right.
cost that you have to factor in.
Rule of thumb is that whatever you're paying for salary, add an additional 35% for all the benefits and taxes.
Right.
So if I'm taking the benefits and increasing those by 10%, salaries are only increasing by 3, the wash between the two is what I was talking about that tends to catch anything, like if there's adjustments to PERS rates or LEF rates, etc., as far as the out year.
So, because we're doing right now, I understand where you're coming from with the 3%. I also understand where this has to come from with things washing out, and you've got some people that change and everything. What we can certainly do is, we've got the data, we can go ahead and pull the actuals from the last few years, maybe the last 5 to 7 years or so, and just prove that 3% number, just if that's something, what would be.
Well, if I may suggest, again, the idea of a model like this is to be more broad stroke and not to go down to that level. Otherwise, that's all you would do all day, is just working. But Councilmember Gamble brought up a good point. Once you create this model, then the ideal is, as part of the annual budget process every year, you readdress the assumptions to see if your projections are matching out to what those first 2 years looked like in your model, and then you make your adjustments accordingly. So, I mean, we can certainly dive that deep if you wanted to, but I wouldn't recommend it.
So Councilmembers, are you... How does the 3% sound?
I'm hearing yes. No, you didn't hear no. I was just kind of questioning whether that was, you know, I get the 3%. I think that's reasonable. I'm just questioning how much increases you get. Will wash out with that. Depending on, I don't know what we pay out a year, like last year in retirement and taxes. I don't know what that is off the top of our head.
And again, you know, again, the idea is that when we start doing 19's budget, that we will hopefully have this model, and we can take a look at that and see how well these assumptions worked.
Yeah.
So, and that's part of what we would definitely vet through the Finance Committee.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we had to stick with 3%, not hearing any objection to that? All right. Please continue.
So then the next one, so another one that we'll look at, and this is, as we've talked about here, both here and at the Finance Committee, is how property taxes and our assessed values, new construction, have been growing. That one's going to take a little bit more diving in, just because the recession kind of reset everything. You know, we heard a lot during that time about the new normal, things like that. when I first got here and I started looking at the history on new construction, I was anticipating around $20 to $30 million for new construction this year, and it came in closer to 90. You know, so it's just kind of all out of whack. So that one's going to take a lot more discussion at a later date. So that's why we're skipping over that one. But that is another factor that then we do build into the model, since property taxes are such a large revenue stream to the general fund. So having said that, the last one here, forgive me if I missed anything. One of the things, and this is your finance director's preference, I don't think the mayor and I have talked about this yet, so my apologies if this is going to surprise you a little bit, is when I build a model like this, I have what I call above the line and below the line. And basically you've heard it be referred to as one-time revenues, one-time expenses, ongoing against ongoing. We do have a reserve policy that does state that. The city has been good about trying to stick to that. And then one of the things that we've started isolating out this year is sales tax on new construction. So that the idea then is that as we build our budget every year, start to identify those programs that maybe the city funds with its general fund dollars that, yes, very worthy, yes, we need to do them, they build community, but technically they're kind of the nice to have below the line items. And the reason that it's important to have those identified is then when you're building this model, you can take those revenues that we would identify as one time, have them below the line also, so that they're matched up better with the programs that are being funded, or conceivably being funded by them. So then really the discussion is around what would be considered one time versus ongoing. So again, I hope that wasn't a surprise. I think we did talk about it once, but okay. I get so into these things, I don't remember talking about what we have. So for example, in the 2018 budget, in doing just a quick perusal of it today, some of the things that I pulled out right away in there that one woman's opinion is one time would be things such as the transfer we're doing for the North Kelsey debt that's coming up, which is going to be the next topic of discussion. Once that paid off, it's gone. So any money, even though it's been multiple years, any money we're setting aside for that, and yes, we do have to set aside that money, would to me be a below the line item, a one-time item. Support for when we have staff support for downtown events. Yeah. They're great to have, they build community, it's a lot of why I like living here. But is that really a base service that the city would provide? You know, it's not public safety, it's not our general parks, etc. Public arts banner, the support that we partner with the Downtown Monroe Association, the senior center, the YMCA, economic development, things of that nature. So that's one. I don't know, Mr. Mayor, if we want to try and tackle some of that tonight, or if that's where we take a stab at that when we create the model itself.
So let's see. So in the policy discussion, then it's recommended we begin to build a long-term budget forecast. Is that where we are?
Yes.
Am I in the right place on my screen? The distinct programs included as part of the 2018 budget should be identified and categorized between base services and nice to have. These items can still be included in the forecast. So the intent is that that's how we've been doing the budgeting, the things that are sort of one-time, called nice to have. Is your intent to see if there's an interest from council to continue to split things up like that in the budget, or to go through the individual items themselves?
I think the intent is more if council is comfortable with staff working with the mayor to identify those when we build the model, so that when we bring it back to you, we can explain to you what we put below the line, so to speak, and then have a discussion at that point. I think it was more tonight to let you know we're looking at that, so that it isn't a surprise when we come back with the model.
Yeah, and just to let everybody know, that has been how we have tried to do things. I think you've heard me say in the past, trying to have one-time expenditures and one-time revenues generally match. So that would be similar to what we've done in the past, although what is below and what is above might be different than in the past years. Councilor Fedak.
So
I agree with that, so below and above. But it sounds like the Kelsey debt repayment to me is a must. You're paying your debt. It's not the same as Downtown Association. It might be a one-time that you pay and you're gone, but it's a must-have, where Downtown might be a one-time you pay and, you know, you might be done, but it's not a must-have. You see what I'm saying? Those two, to me, are very different.
And you're absolutely right. The city made the decision to sell the general obligation bonds for North Kelsey, at that point, if you'd had a model like this, and you would see that, so even though it's a must because you took on that obligation,
right,
in my world, it's still a below-the-line item. So it was a policy decision that was made understanding that you're going to try and use one-time revenues to pay for it. But that if you don't have those one-time revenues, you have to come up with other funding to pay for it.
Right. Yeah. Whereas the instance of the other items you mentioned, you wouldn't have to come up with one-time items.
Correct.
To pay for. So I guess somewhere we're doing above and below has clear indication of what our legal obligation is.
What our mandate is.
Yeah, hey, this is mandated, so if we're not going to pay with one time, it's going to have to, like, as you said, come from somewhere else.
Absolutely.
You don't have a choice. But the other ones, we have choices.
Yeah.
So I agree with staff coming back with that and placing them above our book.
Okay. Councilmember Gamble, you had your tent going on.
That's a great point. That's kind of I can obviously wholeheartedly agree. And I think we have the budgeting like this, and I know one of the biggest reasons we want to make sure that we're not building in a structural deficit, and I think that's what this body proves out, right? We're looking at breaking up any one-time expenses into what is a reoccurring part of the operations, then you can see, okay, this policy decision, we've created a structural deficit if we flow it out because of this. You know, it's ongoing forever. A lot of those are, you know, like any sort of headcount or hiring of additional resources, that would be factored into that side of the, you know, the balance sheet, because that's an ongoing, you're building in that to sustained operations. But I'm glad Patsy brought it up. Yeah, you would want on the, well, I love the analogy, but there are certain things that are below the line that we absolutely have to care for. But there's still one-time expenses. You're 100% right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so there's a city manager currently in Washington City that I won't name who kind of taught me this years ago when he used to work down in Arizona for a utility company. And he talked about when they would do their capital planning to build into their various rate models over a 5-6 year horizon.
I couldn't hear you last week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When they do or what?
When he used to work for a utility district down in Arizona, one of the things that he used to do down there, he was the director of the district, and one of the things they used to do is that when they built their capital plans, they would lay out what their obligations were going to be over a 5-year horizon, they would list the priorities as the ratepayers would ask for, but then they would move anything that was mandated that might have been lower priority up above, so they knew they had to pay for those, and then clearly mark them accordingly so that their constituents knew, while they didn't think that was a priority, the district didn't have a choice about it. So it's the same kind of concept there. It may be a below-the-line item, but because it is mandated, I think that there is some wisdom or it regards to transparency in showing, yes, it's a below-the-item, but yes, it is mandated.
Exactly.
So,
The other thing, too, we'll go back and talk a little bit about some of the terminology, like below the line. I can understand from a policy perspective, you guys, it's really meaningful, it's below the line, that is a term nice to have. We'll see if we can come up with some other terms that kind of reflect what things are. So the mandatory, you know, the one-time mandatory, that plays into forecasting. The nice to have, we'll see if we can come up with some other terminology that explains sort of pilot programs and things like that. Okay. Anything further on this one? Okay. Is that it for you?
That's it for tonight. Now, this is also still on the docket for the Finance Committee in February, that we will dig into some of these a little bit deeper. So when we get the minutes, I'll be sure that we address, you know, especially the very excellent points that Ms. Cutterback brought up.
with regards to the 3% and with the mandated issues.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Maybe I should be on finance committee.
I told you, I
was going to work.
You guys are all going to want to be on the finance
committee. Cargo wanted it.
I mean, why you can't have more than three?
Quorum.
It's right, a rule.
Yeah.
Quorum. Yeah. 2 years of finance, like you can have.
So we're going to have to move on to the next agenda items.
That's one word for it.
This discussion item number 2, AB 18-023, North Kelsey debt payment options, Professor.
So this one is the mandated item we were just talking about. That is a little bit more challenging. As I'm sure you are all aware, we have this debt associated with our North Kelsey property that I understand has been refunded at least once, if not twice. One of the exhibits that I had attached in the packet is the amortization schedule of the existing debt that we have now. So the payment that is due in 2000, it was structured so that there was a principal payment due in 2018, and then the final payment was due in 2020. However, interest is due each year. So the interest was paid in 17. The 18 budget does address the payment for both principal and interest that is due in 18. So the challenge now is identifying what resources the city can set aside to pay the interest payment of a little under $70,000 in 19, and then the remaining principal and interest payment for September of 2020. That payment in September of 2020 is $2.84 million in principal plus the interest, so a little over $2.9 million. Not an insignificant chunk of change. Of course, originally when this project or this property was purchased, my understanding of it was that as the property sold in North Kelsey, that money would be set aside, and that is what was going to be used to make bond payments. And that was working, and that's part of what is paying the 2018 bond payment. However, then something called a recession hit, and so the land didn't sell as quickly as we would hope. And this is a case where your finance director is going to think in worst case scenario. If no other piece of property over there sells, this is a non-voted general obligation bond, meaning that yes, while we wanted the property sales to be the money used to pay the bond, we have obligated the general obligation of the city, i.e. our existing property taxes, to make these payments if we have no other funds to do so. So Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Kent.
What's the total debt on North Kelsey?
$4.14 million in principal plus.
So the 2020 payment will effectively cut it in half?
Pretty darn close, yeah. And again, Exhibit 1 in this agenda bill is the actual amortization schedule. So on
right.
So in fact, I can.
Don't want to look
for that. Well, the 2018 payment is $1.4 million, and the next payment that we have due in 2020 is
$2.9
million.
Yeah, and that'll pay it off.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll be paid off in 2020
as well.
Okay.
No, I'm just
kidding. So there's the amortization schedule.
Councilmember Gamble?
So the remaining properties, because I get you're in estimate. So you got to have the backup, totally.
Right.
And I actually like some strategies we've got dialed in here. But the remaining property, if you targeted at the price per square foot that we have talked about, what is the total value of the property that is remaining to be sold?
So it's approximately 12 acres. So you have to take 12 times the 45,000 square feet, and then multiply that by $10 an acre. I think I figured out the other day that 2 acres is about $10 an acre is about 900,000, so about $1 million for 2 acres, right? So that'd be 6 times.
45,000, 60,000, 60,000, 60,000. Yeah. To a well over what?
Yeah.
So that's what I thought, if I remember. You know.
Yeah,
so I just wanted to draw that to our attention, because we've got, we're planning worst case, And sometimes when you go through and you plan worst case, everybody's so freaking out.
Worst case, dream, we don't sell.
Correct. But
in the timeline.
We just as a reminder, we really haven't been marketing this product, in my opinion, in the last, what, 2 years? I mean, our broker that came in didn't even know how they were marketing it when we asked some questions. So, anyway, I just wanted to kind of let us know before we jump into the options.
Yeah, some of these options are interesting. Leave it at that.
Good. Proceed with the options.
And that was the intent here, is to give you all options, good, bad, and ugly. And again, as Mr. Scarborough pointed out, worst case scenario is we don't sell any more property within the 2 to 3 years that we have, that this bond comes due. One of the recommendations, I'm kind of skipping to the end here, is that, you know, we do nothing and then maybe try and refund it again or refinance it again at that point. The reason that is not a palatable option is that then that just continues to add additional costs.
Right.
You know, so especially if we have to do another general obligation bond, then you're adding bond attorney fees, underwriting fees, you gotta go through a whole rating criteria again. And then depending on where the interest rate market is at that time, and then you've gotta identify how you're gonna make the payments, depending on how you structure the loan again. So what we tried to do is also look at other options to try and avoid having to do that. So one of the first options, and what we think is one of the easiest, is what I call the unallocated general fund revenues. So as I've been working on closing out 2017, and we still are away from having it completely closed, but first blush, we're looking at coming in over $600,000 better than what was anticipated for the beginning of 18. So the recommendation here is to take that $600,000 and automatically sweep it over to the North Kelsey Fund and let it sit there for that 2020 payment. Because again, 2018 is covered at this point. That is money then that wouldn't cut into anything that is already budgeted as far as any existing programs or any of the existing departments. And part of the reason that money is there is, of course, we've had revenues come in better than expected, especially in sales taxes. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, all the departments were really good about not spending their full allocation. Mm-hmm. There, some of that is carryover of about around $300,000 from the end of 16 going into 17 as well. So it looks like we're hitting about $300,000 each year. So I think even though, you know, we want to be conservative, it's a safe assumption to anticipate that all the directors, again, are going to continue to show good fiscal restraint and that we may come in again another $300,000 better than anticipated at the end of 18, that we would recommend sweeping that as well. So there's $900,000 towards the 2.9 goal. So that kind of covers that first couple of paragraphs there. Now, part of what we did build into the 18 budget is to transfer $170,000 from the general fund over to the North Kelsey Fund so that we can make that payment. So we've already proven that the general fund can handle that much. My recommendation is that in 19, we automatically build that into the budget again. $69,000 of that would be needed to make the interest payment for 19, but then the remaining $101,000 would be available then to again be reserved towards that 2020 payment. And please, I'm going to start going through these pretty quickly. Slow us down if you've got any questions. So this is where it gets a little bit more dicier. This is probably, you start getting into the bad and the ugly here. Bank capacity. The city has a history of not taking its full 1% as allowed by law every year. So that's been building up your bank capacity. You did tap into some of that bank capacity for the 2017 budget. And that's why you'll see here in the table that when you look at the rate per thousand for your assessed valuation, 17 did jump back up from $1.15 to $1.29. That represents the bank capacity you took. But if you look at it historically, even with taking that bank capacity,
you're still below what your assessed value or your millage rates were from, you know, as early as 2013-2014. Based on the certified assessed valuations we've received from the county for 2018, we do have a little over $640,000 in bank capacity that is available to use. As a general obligation bond, your ultimate payment source is supposed to be your property taxes. So this does make some sense to look at the bank capacity as a means to help make this payment. So we are recommending, of course, not wiping out the whole bank capacity. It's kind of a nice rainy day fund in a sense, but if we do tap into about $200,000 of it, that can then be dedicated and held for the North Kelsey bond payment, and it resets the amount that we would either take the 1% against in future years or keep static, so that it would actually be available for both 19 and 20 to have that $200,000 then for the North Kelsey bond. Based on some quick assumptions here for both 19 and for 2020, if we assume the more conservative $20 million increase each year for new construction, and that we don't take the 1%, but our assessed values grow at a moderate rate, then I've actually calculated out what it looks like resetting 19 at that 200 with the additional $200,000 in property taxes for your millage rate, and then again you see it start going back down again, since there's an inverse relationship between the rate per thousand we charge on assessed values and as assessed values climb. So again, we wouldn't even reach the level that we were at for 2017 as far as your rate per thousand on a home by taking that $200,000 in bank capacity. But fair is fair, I do want you to realize that it will have that first bump in 2019. Whether it reaches $1.25 as the rate per thousand is dependent on how much assessed values go up, based on what properties might be assessed at as well. The faster property values increase, the faster that millage rate goes down.
Okay. Councilor Serra,
thank you. You don't have to explain it to me right now, but perhaps in the Finance Committee, the next time we meet, will you explain to me what you mean when you say we did take the 1% that we're entitled to from somewhere? You don't have to do it right now.
I'm happy to do it right now.
Well, I don't want to take everybody else's time because I don't know where it is.
So historically, cities have been allowed with their property taxes. There's two caps if you wanted to raise property taxes. There's the amount per thousand that you can charge at any given time for most cities. Well, for us, because we have voted into a fire district, that cap would be $1.60 per thousand is the highest we could go. So if we were to go out, so for example, we're at $1.18 this year. And if we wanted to raise it beyond what 1% would give us, we could go to the voters, talk to them about what's called the levy lid lift.
And get the $1.60.
And get the $1.60.
Okay, correct. Does that come out of the money that the county takes on our property taxes?
No. That would be in addition to all the other independent taxes.
So all the increases that we're going to incur this year for education funding, everybody's taxes are going to go up $300 to $600 there.
That's through the state, correct.
Okay, through the state. Plus, what you're talking about, the one or the $1.60 is above that if we chose to do it.
If you chose to do it.
Okay.
But that's done with the vote. What you can
1%
do
is not, but
correct.
That is.
Correct. So what a city can do, it used to be you could go up 6%. As long as you remained under that $1.60 cap without a vote, without going to a vote of the people. That was your local authority. Then Initiative 747 came along. Well, first Referendum 43 came along that actually decreased that 6% down to 1%, or it decreased the increase that a city with a population of 10,000 or more to either 6%
or the implicit price deflator, the IPD I mentioned earlier, whichever was lower. So when that referendum went through, at the time, the IPD was running between 1 and 2%. And that passed pretty handily, so then we had this dual cap. We had to look at either the 6% or IPD, or if you wanted to go above IPD, then you had to adopt a second ordinance that talked about an extraordinary need, you know, that then you held a public hearing on, and if nobody objected, then you could still go up to that 6%. But then Initiative 747 came along that actually capped that at 1%, or IPD for referendum qualified cities. Those two tended to be pretty close together. Even though 747 was found to be unconstitutional, the state legislature went ahead and made that into law, so that's why instead of 6%, it is now down to the 1%.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean that a city has to enact its ability to take that full 1%, and Monroe traditionally does not. You choose to keep your tax collection at the same level that you had the prior year before consideration of new construction. So any growth that we have been seeing with regards to property taxes in the general fund has been through new construction.
Okay.
So does that make sense?
That's what I was trying to determine is, as soon as we say we want more money, it's going to be more and above what the state has decided we're going to pay in the next round.
Yeah.
For people, I just want people.
Yeah, see. And you bring up a good point. The property tax bill that we pay as citizens is all taxing districts on that house. The piece that Monroe gets is just a small percent. It's about 11% of that overall property tax bill.
Yeah. That's why I'm trying to determine, does it come out of that money?
No. Those other districts also have the same constraints or can also go out and ask for voted approval, etc. So, yeah.
This is much
that
I understand right now.
Believe me, that's 20 years and I still don't understand it all. So the recommendation as far as, you know, if we don't end up selling the properties is to take some of that bank capacity, because as it was pointed out earlier, we do have to make this payment. So the last but not final, utility taxes. This is the ugly, so to speak. I have to admit, I was a little surprised when I got here and I saw that we do charge a utility tax against our water utility, but we do not charge that same utility tax against our sewer or our stormwater utility. Normally, I see that it's all three. We do collect the utility tax that we are allowed against electric and natural gas and telephone. So basically, we do charge utility taxes to all our utilities with the exception of sewer and stormwater. The reason that a lot of cities will choose to take a utility tax against their utilities is, from a government accounting standpoint, your utilities are treated as separate entities. They're treated like their own business. They're rate-driven. They are not tax-supported. And if they were privately or semi-privately owned, like a CMB or, you know, a private water district, they would pay taxes. In fact, we do pay B&O tax to the state on all three utilities. We treat them like separate businesses. So if they were privately owned, they would pay property taxes to us. PSE pays property taxes to us. It's just that the state collects it first and then they divvy it up accordingly. So in a sense, when we charge utility taxes on our own utilities, it's an in lieu of property tax is what you're talking about. Again, if the utilities were their own businesses, they would have their own board of directors, they would have their own CFO, CEO, etc. That's part of why we do recover overhead costs from the utilities as part of the rates. Because they don't have to hire their own separate CFO. They're using City Hall administration for that. So it's fair, and actually the auditors expect to see that because they don't want unfair treatment to the utilities. Just like the flip side of that is general government type activities, police, city hall, fire, they have to pay for the water that we use, or any of the utilities we receive, even though it's city-owned utilities, we do have to pay those bills out of the general fund. So it's kind of a, it gets into the philosophy of how much do you want to treat them like a true business. So having said all that, there is an untapped potential here that if we were to treat the sewer and the stormwater similar to what we do with the water utility, we're talking about potentially a 10% utility tax. So my memo does go into, if we have that 10% utility tax in 18, the money that's being left on the table, what we would have collected had that been the case. So again, since we want to bring all options to you, if we were to have, if the city were to adopt a utility tax, say to be effective July 1, then we could realize around $500,000 in additional revenue to the general fund in 2018, and over $1 million then going forward, and it would grow, of course, you know, based on population and accounts, etc. Couple of things about utility taxes. Even though you will see some utilities that will break it out separately on the utility bill, it is not a pass-through tax. It's not like a sales tax. It is a tax on the utility. And in fact, I confirmed that with municipal research after we had talked about that with the water utility tax with the finance committee at the end of last year. The other thing too is we are a referendum city, referendum and initiative city. And this is something that if the council were to want to adopt it, it would be subject to referendum. So it couldn't go into effect for at least 30 days after an ordinance was adopted. I did do a little research as well and took a look at other organizations around us to see who charged what for utility taxes. If I may. So I started just kind of the folks closest to us, as you can see here. Sultan and Snohomish both charge utility taxes, but they do not charge them to their stormwater, so I didn't get a chance to call them and ask why not the storm. Lake Stevens does not have its own utilities, so that's why they don't have one. You can see there where Marysville charges 8.5% on all three, but they also charge an additional $3.37.5 against the book value of their utilities for a property tax on top of the utility tax. Gold Bar does not have a sewer system. Duval, you can see there, is 10%. Muckleteel does not have water and sewer, and etc. So we're kind of outside the norm here with only charging one of our three utilities. Beyond that, I don't know. Which kind of question?
Councilmember Cutback.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what the downside is. I mean, obviously, if you're taking money from the utilities to pay this tax, does that affect our capital plan? I mean, how does that affect the utilities? So, because what's the downside from doing this? And it sounds like this is almost a last option, because that's like the ugly.
Well,
I'm trying to get a sense of
the downside. So yes, eventually it does come back to where we have to take a look at the rates. Do the rates currently support paying this additional expense?
Okay.
Right now, the sewer, I would say we're a year or two away from having to, you know, even if you were to adopt this now, the existing rates could support it for another year or two. But, you know, it's coming up to be time to start taking a hard look at all our utility rates again. So it's just another expense to the utility that would eventually get wrapped into the rates.
Okay.
So that's a potential downside. The other potential downside, quite frankly, is the optics of it. Anytime you talk about a new tax,
sure,
you know, it tends to end up being more emotional than rational. From a rational standpoint, I'll be the first one to say this does make sense.
Yeah.
You want to treat your utilities in an equitable manner.
And it's overhead.
Yeah.
I mean, basically.
Well, we cover overhead on top of this. So,
So this, so probably the best way to maybe look at it is, for example, your local coffee shops. They have to pay property tax to the city. Our own utilities don't because they're city owned. You know, but if you're going to treat them like other businesses and other business sectors, this is a way to capture that property tax, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out, because when I look at them, I mean, it would make logical sense to treat them all the same. Now, you can treat them the same by having them pay cash, but not having it the same percentage if we're worried about increasing rates.
Or the other option is, if you wanted to be equitable across the three, you charge the same rate, but maybe you look at, instead of 10% on water, you make it 8% on all three.
That's what I thought.
Or, you know, so there's something to be said there.
Yeah.
You know, again, that's council's prerogative, it's a policy decision. Now, if I'm going to be fair and talk about the pros of this, you know, as you mentioned, it's treating all of them equitably, including, you know, and we are collecting utility tax, like I said, on our outside utilities, natural gas, electric, phone. We do collect all of those as well. And those are at the maximum 6% as allowed. Having said that, the other advantage to this is, if we did, once this debt service is paid for North Kelsey, this becomes money that's available in your general fund then to be able to fund other programs or other needs that we have in the city. And that's actually something that Ms. Knight's going to talk about when we get into the six-year strategic plan. Because we do know that we have some needs on the horizon, but right now a lot of that is, yeah, it's nice to have, but we got this $2.9 million we've got to pay. You know, so it's an untapped revenue stream that would be available for other needs. And then another advantage, too, is that as utilities may or may not expand outside of city limits, it is a way to bring revenue into the general fund on those accounts that are outside the city to help pay for, you know, like our parks, our police services, et cetera, within the city that they, or our streets, you know, let's be honest, they are coming in and using our services. So.
Any other questions?
So basically, if you wanted to use the recommendations that are in this memo as a roadmap, that was our exhibit 2, where did I put that? No, that was the memo we were just on. Sorry. There it is. This is what it would look like. So the September 2020 debt service, the 2.9, less the sweeps from the general fund, the 170,000 transfer that we talked about. Oh, the one I skipped over, my apologies. We have been identifying the new construction sales tax, and that's kind of technically a one-time, even though it's been ongoing multiple years. Our recommendation is to identify half of that and reserve that for the North Kelsey debt as well. That way it still leaves you the other half for the other programs that the city traditionally funds. Then we talked about the bank capacity. Now, I know that there's probably, the reality is some of that land will sell. So we did factor some of that in here as well in our worst case scenario, and then this is what we could realize from utility taxes that then gets us there, that we wouldn't have to do any refunding or refinancing in 2020.
Mm-hmm. Any questions for any council members? Councilmember Cutback?
I think that's a great plan. Thank you for bringing that to us. Question about timing, if we were to do bank capacity, because I think, I thought I heard you mention something about 2018, but no.
No, so it's 2019 would be the earliest.
So when do we have to decide that?
When you do the property tax levy in November.
In November, okay. That was my only question.
Yeah. I would recommend, though, that you make that decision in June, because that's going to be helpful then in putting our whole entire budget together.
Okay.
So this will be coming back to you at your budget workshop in June, and that's when we would make the final decision.
Okay.
That's why we're doing this sort of meeting format early in the year, so we can get feedback from council, and we just don't drop something on council on, you know, October 1st. Anything further, Councilmember? Okay, Councilmember Campbell.
Thank you. I guess I'm so confused with this. Is this the worst case scenario? Worst case.
Worst case. It
included sales in here. And my understanding is if we were to sell everything at maximum dollar, we would be, which is what, $10 a square foot or something, then we would have more than the money to cover everything. This wouldn't apply, correct?
Correct. So we actually did say in the memo that if property did sell, then we wouldn't need,
we'd have to pick and choose which of these, then we wouldn't, it would be money that goes back to the general fund to then be available for other programs. Worst case scenario, the reason we have the sales in there, and I think Ms. Knight can probably speak to it better than I can, is that maybe I am being a little optimistic that at least one of the parcels will sell. And so that's why the $250,000 figure, but we didn't want to go too high with that for being conservative.
So in the event of, I guess, if I'm understanding the dates, then by June, we'd have to make the decision on whether or not we have to do this.
Well, we'd like direction.
Whichever direction. If things are as they are, and we are approaching the worst case, then by June, we have to make this decision whether or not we're going to use the sewer utility gas and big pumping capacity.
So the ideal would be by June, even though we would adopt the property tax ordinance in November, we'd like to know that council is supportive of if you're going to take any bank capacity. Because as Ms. Knight pointed out, then we want to build that into the budget projections that we are doing for
2019. So
correct.
When would any tax increase go into effect?
January 1 of 2019. Now, as far as the utility tax, you can do that at any time. It's just that there's a 30-day wait because it is subject to referendum.
Thank you.
Sure. I'm going to go ahead and acknowledge Ms. Knight, and then we'll go to Councilmember Gamble.
Right, and I just wanted to point out that the property sale of $250,000 is the purchase and sale agreement that we're currently holding.
That's just to call that out.
But that's the reason why it's included, is because it's a fairly certain outcome as opposed to any other property sale that might happen on that site.
So any further sales would be in addition to the $250,000 which would reduce the need for any major tax increases or new taxes. Okay, thank you.
Councilor Gamble.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought it was that the $250 was from the purchase and sale agreement that we have right now. Worst case, this is the worst case scenario, and I mean, in my way of, you know, of thinking $5 to $6 million worth of property to sell in a market that is actually pretty hot right now, and putting in marketing effort and spend on it, I do think that $250 is a little conservative in my opinion, even worst case scenario, to me it's a little conservative. So from that perspective, I don't, you know, I would up that amount a little bit even in we're doing a total worst case scenario, but from a logically, when we start talking budget direction in June, I would want to see more of a realistic where we're gonna land based off of the money that we're spending on the marketing plan and all that kind of stuff. So that we could go through it, to your point, I think you said it earlier, but where we go through and go, okay, well, this is option 1, 2, 3, we're going to say yes on all of these, right, on these three options as, you know, a go in June or whatever. There's actually a couple levers, and actually the last two you even said, you can use it at any time in the 30-day period. But the last two on the sewer, the utility tax stuff, but that would be something we would hold in our back pocket if we needed going into 2019 and just realize the 30-day wait. That would be my thought on that.
Any further? Okay, and also remember, this is to get direction in June, and things can change in November, too.
Yep. Well, that's, The other point we didn't bring up, we were asking, we're going to ask, quite technically, it's when we make the vote in November, that's why.
Which historically has been December.
Correct, that's why I said
Okay, we go Councilmember Knight, and then Councilmember Baker. I'm sorry.
Money for North Council.
I do want to temper the council's expectations around the sale of that property. After talking to the brokers, both past and the ones that we just interviewed in the last 2 weeks, that property is not going to be easy to sell, even in this market, simply because the market for retail has changed so significantly. So although this is termed the worst case scenario, I would not want to change that $250,000 just because I don't want to anticipate revenues coming in from sales over which we have absolutely no control. I do agree, I think, with Councilmember Campbell's proposed approach, which is our priorities in implementing these are 1, 2, and 3, and I appreciate the fact that you recognize that the utility tax specifically is built on the idea that that gets implemented in January. So again, we delay making that decision, and this budget year recognize that, you know, any delay in that is going to reduce your revenues. So I appreciate that you recognize that.
Will never has the floor to you for a question. Who's got it?
Councilor Pam, related to that.
Okay, so let's pretend you're telling us to be careful of the $250,000. So now this is going to be the second worst case scenario. We don't have the $250,000 in sales now.
So quite frankly, if you did adopt the 10% utility tax on the sewer and storm, you can make up that $250,000.
Okay.
The amount that we're suggesting that you reserve towards North Kelsey is not the whole amount that can be realized. So because we're recognizing that if that is a revenue stream the council wanted to tap into, there are also other needs that the city has on the horizon that's kind of like pending until North Kelsey is paid that could start being accelerated a little bit with that utility tax. Again, you know, if the utility tax had been adopted for 18, we'd be realizing an additional $1 million towards the general fund, or that would be the projection, depending on, you know, if utility sales come in higher than that, then it will be higher. We're only asking for a portion of that. So that leaves you some wiggle room then if that property sale for some reason falls through.
And just to make certain I'm on the same page, so on page 3 of 8 in your memo at the very bottom, it said a 10% utility tax would have resulted in $824,670 in additional revenue to the general fund from sewer,
right,
and $177,720 from stormwater for a total of just very slightly over $1 million. And what you're showing there then is in 2 years, not 1 year, but 2 years, $1 million, which means you're only dedicating of this 10% that's in this memo half of it.
Correct.
Okay. That then would clearly make up the 250 in the event that doesn't get realized.
Okay. We can just get everybody to switch from dishes on their homes if you pay for it all, right?
I try.
Councilmember Kim, do you have any other points of clarification?
Well, I do with Councilmember.
Okay. So, Councilmember Hamper, go for it.
Thank you. Could you just clarify, kind of define the 30-day referendum?
So the city has adopted in the past the powers of initiative and referendum for its citizens. So there are certain ordinances when you adopt them that are automatically, that become subject to that. So if you were to pass an ordinance to adopt, say, 10% on sewer and stormwater, it would need to be written up in such a way that it wouldn't go into effect for 30 days. So that when we published it, if someone wanted to try and do a referendum to negate it, they would have 30 days in which to do that. And I don't know if you want to add to that.
Sure, I guess I would just add that that as Becky said, that is in play, and you do pass ordinances sometimes that fall under that initiative and referendum, so sometimes you do see ordinances that have a 30-day effective date, and that is why. It gives the public time to be able to file an initiative or referendum petition
based on that type of action. So that is already in play, and that is already something that you've seen some of our ordinances. So that's nothing new. I guess just bringing it to light that this particular item would be one of those items.
Thank you. Anything for the council member? Councilor Kent?
Thank you. Okay, another might be an economics 101 course question, but everything portrayed right here is the ultimate goal of paying off North Kelsey.
That is the first priority, yes.
Okay, then what's the next priority after?
To also then tap into some of our unused revenue streams for the general fund so that we can, when we talk about the six-year strategy plan for some of the projects and initiatives that we have out there that we know we need to do that we currently don't have funding for, it would then help. Once it's freed up from North Kelsey, it would become available for that.
So I'm thinking of the sales position. If worst case scenario happens, and this is what we have to go with, and we're raising taxes, at the end of the 2 years, when the taxes are, when the debt is paid off, the expectation is that the taxes would continue to fund all these other projects and everything else. So.
That's Ms. Knight.
What? I'm sorry, I slapped four. Just don't.
No, she's going to answer that for you.
Okay,
she's probably in a better position to answer that.
And I would say at that point when the debt service is paid off, it's again a council policy decision about whether or not you want to change any of the revenue streams and eliminate them all that's paid for, you don't need to collect it any further, or if council at that time wants to have a conversation around we're collecting revenue streams, are there other priorities that we'd like to fund?
Well,
you get to have that policy discussion.
Yes, I agree. I understand that, but what I'm concerned about is that if you go into emergency mode and go to the public and say, look, we have to do this because we have all this debt from 10, 15 years ago that we have to pay off, their expectation is going to be that when the emergency's over, you put the fire hose away. So I'm just concerned that if we go into the expectation that once we pay off the debt, we're going to be able to carry that forward and start working on other projects that are important to various groups in the city, might not be a good thing.
And that is a policy conversation.
And I want to make sure that that's clearly out there to the public, that they are aware that for 2 years, this is the emergency, but after that, they need to be able to wait on. That's just a concern I have about that.
I would agree. I think transparency is important in this case. And
especially in this case.
And council's going to want to, I think, however you adopt these by ordinance or resolution, be clear, you know, in the whereas section about what your policy intent is when you're adopting this plan.
Well, rather than a whereas section, I'm thinking more like an ad for a page of paper, but that's just my I do have another question. If could we get, you mentioned that if we had to refund this debt, that there would be additional fees. Can we get an idea of how much that would be? Just in, I'm thinking of the worst case scenario where we cannot do this, we don't have the money, and we're going to have to refund this. So we have an expectation, an idea of what we could expect of something
like that. The rule of thumb is as far as for the underwriting and the bond attorney costs, you're running 5% of whatever the debt instrument is going to be. So if we do $3 million, say, you're looking at $1,500. I think that's 5%. I'm an accountant doing math in my head. It's probably not a good thing. But rule of thumb is about 5% as far as that goes. Where interest rates are going, who's to say? And there isn't a bond underwriter I know that would even take a guess for something 2 years out, especially as the Fed talks about raising rates.
You have historical data that said the last time we did this, it cost us X amount of dollars.
I can look that
or
up.
Or $10 million. Yeah. Then I have an idea on a percentage that I can look at and know I won't hold you to any of this. I just want to make sure I understand what the impact would be if, like I said, it is, we get to the worst case scenario. of that compliance.
I can certainly look that up and send that out to you guys. Now, another option is, and we do talk about it in the memo, is that if maybe we can get it down to about $1 million, if we had, you know, enough reserve that we get it down to $1 million, then possibly we could do an interfund loan versus going outside for do an interfund loan.
Oh, okay.
Because we are, right now we do have some cash sitting out there in, say, for example, real estate excise taxes. While this debt does not qualify to use real estate excise taxes to help pay for it, we can certainly do an interfund loan,
right.
And then we can tie the interest rate to like what the LGIP is earning. So as long as we keep the loaning fund whole, you know, if we had been investing that money, they would have earned that rate from the LGI, the local government investment pool. Sorry, I was falling into acronyms again. Then, you know, we could manage that, but $1 million, we'd still have to have a revenue stream to make payments, because usually interfund loans only run about 5 years, so you're talking $200,000 a year plus interest. So you're still going to need to tap into one of these as a means to be able to make those payments. And again, I get back to you, this is an unvoted general obligation bond. Ultimately, you have to use property taxes to pay it if you've got nothing else.
Well, that makes sense. Like I said, if you get that information,
sure.
That'd be just like a good idea.
Sure.
All right, thank you.
Anything further on this?
I was just going to say, we were remembering the last time it was around 150,000, 5% of 3 million, 150,000.
But if it's $1 million, we mentioned you said that much.
I do like the idea of the, probably should draw that up for the June discussion on the, where you do options, you know. What would that be? Line 6, 7, and you know, 8, kind of the stuff that's just transferred and then enter. That's another option that's there.
Right.
Put out one after the other. I think the piece that we'll look into, Councilmember Camp's point, we're concerned around programs or, you know, other areas of priority than the 6-year plan. I think what we're going to hear is that some of these are not nice to have, but maybe potentially structural deficits if you don't find revenue sources in the future.
Well, I'd like that.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Sounds good. Anything further on this one? All right. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next discussion item. This is discussion item number 3, AB 18-024, Council Chambers and City Hall alternatives. And who's presenting this one?
Okay.
We'll go ahead and take a 5-minute recess. We'll reconvene at about 7:05. Alright, we're going to come back into session, having been in recess. Time right now is 7:06 p.m. And the agenda bill is under discussion item number 3. This is AB 18-024. Council Chambers, City Hall alternatives.
Okay, thank you everybody. So to get started here, Liz and I are going to co-present a discussion of our City of Monroe Municipal Campus Plan, our next steps, which include what we've kind of already talked about this evening, the area outside and then also the area inside here, which is the room we are presently in, the Council Chambers and Municipal Court, depending on what time of day you're in here. So hopefully it's actually the first one enough for that. We started the campus plan in 2008. It was a master plan developed back around, started in probably 2006-2007. We began work, so construction activities, in 2009, and the campus plan was designed very much to be malleable. I was trying to think of another word for phase-in moldable, and that's all I came up with. So malleable in the sense of that it needed to fit our funding resources as allocated by council through our budget process, but also meet the needs of the city. So what next do we need to do, and then how do we get there, and then running through our budgetary process beginning in, you know, the summertime and walking through. Some of the things we've accomplished so far that were included in the campus plan, the 769 Village Way building, which is where Public Works and Parks offices and the lunch room areas are housed presently. We were able to purchase that building, and then also in 2009, we built a vaccine camp facility, which was imperative in order to meet our NPDES requirements for our storm system. So that's the, keeping with the acronym thing here, National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. So that's the requirement we have to clean our storm system on an annualized basis. We also were able to bring vehicle fueling on site. So prior to that period in 2013, we were fueling off site, saved considerable cost for our fleet, and also the trips down to the fuel station and back. And we moved our bulk water filling station from basically at the police department's back door, which they didn't like very much operationally, which I completely understand, to the back there area there on Village Way. Phase three is the public works shop, which is due to start construction in the next couple of months here. So we're well into design there, and we've actually gotten our civil permit done. We're getting our building permit reviewed at this point. We just paid for it last week. And then the associated campus shuffle that comes with that. So that shop is going to take up quite a bit of space in the back area. It has to do with where the police park their vehicles, where parks works out of, and where public works works out of. So we're going to do some manipulating of structures and where people's offices are housed and things of that nature that are all part of that project. And that is coming up here shortly. So,
and Jake, just real quick, phase one, two, and three, the funding sources for these?
So depending on the project, some of them came from general fund and utility funds. Some of them came solely from utility funds. It really depended on who was housed where and how they were using it. You know, if it's police fuel, it's general fund. If it's water, sewer, storm fuel, it's utility fund.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, streets. Where was I? Okay, so phase four is the council chambers, municipal courtroom, and potential for administrative offices. I think with that, I am going to hand this off to Liz, and here she is.
Okay. Get stuff in here. Okay. So yes, I got the short end of the stick. Ha ha ha. So we're going to first start by looking at some short-term challenges and solutions. And just in our discussions with staff, these are things that we've thrown together. So by no means is this everything inclusive. So please feel free to bring forward any other items that you see coming forward or that you'd like to add into the discussion. Again, sort of the way we put together what we thought we would like to see tonight and considering some different options here and specifically solutions. So just looking at the current format, not really meeting the needs of both City Council and Municipal Court, which are, you know, two of the main entities using this space. Certainly lots of other entities, such as our boards and commissions, and also the potential to have this space for open houses and other types of meetings. That need has started to arise as well. And we're just looking for some short-term improvements or solutions. So we wanted to start off.
I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Specifically, do you have an example of a need something that, I mean, I have my own opinion, but I'm just curious what you're looking for.
We will be looking at that in just a couple of minutes.
Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, and so we just started by really trying to define a problem for kind of the entire look here for short-term solutions. So what we came up with was, what is the best location layout for the council chamber space in order to best meet the needs and values of the mayor, council, boards, commissions, municipal court, city staff, and the public? So we tried to see what kind of stakeholders we're really talking about utilizing this space, and that's what we came up with. So then we turn to ask ourselves some questions to kind of break down what the values might be and the needs that would kind of tie into those values. So one exercise to kind of get towards the values that you're looking at is to ask yourself why. And they suggest asking yourself why five times and just really diving deep into what a specific question is and where you're going with that. So we kind of looked at why do we have council chambers and looking at that meeting space option and why do we need to have a meeting space. So of course, for me, the big one was OPMA, but certainly each of our different entities that use this space, and when I use entity, I mean, you know, council, court, boards and commissions, public, staff for open houses. You know, there's lots of different needs and that we need to have a room for that. Of course, why is the OPMA important? So looking at that transparency piece, open government, ADA, and also accessing the meetings and services. Why are these things important? We kind of left that one open because certainly that could be open to discussion. If people have more needs than what we're addressing, we'd certainly be able to build them into this module and see if we're not meeting a need, if we're not discussing a need, and it's something that we need to be discussing, we can add that in. So some of those those needs that we thought, how could we meet them, as we looked at this transparency, open, be welcoming space, that people want to come here for meetings, they want to be here, they want to use the space, they want to be in the building. Professional look and feel, ADA accessibility, of course, we've talked a lot about that and trying to improve this room in that way. Looking for versatility, being able to use the space for all of those different purposes. Of course, considering fiscal sustainability and making sure that we're using the public's money to improve this space in a wise way. And then also the idea of, you know, once we get the space, do we want to start incorporating that, the adventure starts here aspects? So that could kind of come into some design elements, which we could do kind of down the road. So those are kind of just some of the values that we considered when we were looking at the use of this space.
Are there any values that staff hasn't identified on here that council feels is important? And we do acknowledge, and it may be on another slide, but the court also uses the facility, so one of the things that's important is that the space be something that meets the needs of the court. Judge Rosano.
The only thing that isn't listed there is the concern with the court is safety.
I was going to agree.
Anything further? Councilmember Cutback.
So I'm going to this training. I don't know if anyone's heard of the Pomegranate Center. Mm-hmm. And so they're a group that works on creating space where it's like public, like builds community and helps foster the democratic process. And so I don't know much about it. But they're supposed to help organizations learn how to build spaces based on their value and need, and that fit into that. So I think that is in, I don't think when it is, maybe February. So there's a training that Child Stride is putting on in, I think in Casino Road. And so it's just an interesting thing to think about as we're trying to build community and look at the values and how best to promote, especially democratic process, people speaking, people being involved in the process. So I can get the dates. I think it's a fairly pricey training. I think it's $4,500 a person. So I might be attending that, but maybe something just to look into as we go through this. So.
Okay. Anything else?
So then we tried to look at what these values were and tie them to some objectives, and then also figure out how would you measure that we would meet those objectives. So some of the objectives that we came away from the values from was being able to maximize the space, as in the usable space, which kind of ties back into the next one, which is usability and versatility, so being able to use it for many different purposes. Also having a great audiovisual experience, ADA accessibility, minimizing the cost, so just looking at, you know, what can we actually do for what cost, and also the time. So looking at if this is a short-term solution, everything that we want to look at doing here could be accomplished in the next 2 months. It's not going to be long and drawn out. These are immediate solutions that we can put into the works. So then you kind of look at those measurable pieces. So for the space, we looked at the total room size and the open space size. So that's really just the area that you can really kind of just move everything around in. Then we looked at a bunch of different room capacities based on the different setups that we have, regular setups for council and also the court. Looking at ADA upgrades, ADA upgrades, and then just getting some numbers for total costs based on what we want to do in each alternative that we'll discuss in a moment, and also the time frame again for each alternative that we have. So that's just tying the values to how we were going to measure if we could meet those values. So by creating sort of, this is what we call it, a consequence matrix. You have your objectives, your sub-objectives, and then you figure out what alternatives you want to rank and put them together. So a quick overview of the alternatives there. Alternative one is doing nothing or just status quo, keeping where we're at, and that really just shows you where we're at and gives you the numbers for where we're starting. And certainly that's an alternative, is just kind of hang out and we're doing well, we're going to keep with what we're doing. Alternative two is updating audiovisual equipment only. And very specifically, we would actually go to a completely wireless system. So the audio would be wireless, wireless mics, we'd maybe get some more amplifiers, and then also we'd go to more of the wireless laptops so that everything audiovisual would be movable. And one piece to mention on alternative two is that even if you just made that upgrade alone, we could continue to use audiovisual in the future if you decided to then later go with another alternative that kind of comes. They kind of, it's kind of a stairway approach here. So alternative three is the AV and a complete room remodel to remove the permanent platform, so the U shape over here, making one large open space, oh, and removing this little situation over here. You can stay, Jacob. But just making a nice big open space. And then you would just transform the setting by altering the furniture and the fixtures, so your tables and chairs and whatnot. Alternative four, again, another step up. So it's AV, removing the platform to make the large open space, and purchasing mobile stage units to replace the permanent platform, so that if you did want to have a setting where you would have a raised setting, you would accomplish that by using a mobile platform. And then alternative five would be to do the AV and complete remodel, but create a new permanent platform. And that would basically take the U out and make one long platform along this side of the wall here. What is that, north end? Yeah. So it'd be, if I'm right, it'd be about the same distance out from the wall there, but it would span the entire north end there. So just to give you a visual of what we're talking about. And so then again, you can just kind of see when we're looking at square footage there, looking at the room capacity for different layouts for council and for the court, and then also looking at, obviously, AV upgrades and ADA upgrades. So alternative one and two, you upgrade the audiovisual, but there would be no changes to ADA, so no new ramps, anything like that. But if you go into the alternative 3, 4, 5, you're going to get some of that. We're going to go into each one a little bit more detail, so unless there's questions on this, I'm just going to go ahead and move forward.
Just on the cost, is that cumulative, or is that going to be the total? If you did five, is that the total for 1 through 5? Or, well,
yes.
One doesn't have cost, but 2 through 5?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, so just looking at alternative one of doing nothing, we just wanted to kind of look at what the challenges are that we're experiencing. So we did do some visual layouts here, and these are to scale. So thank you to Mark Newman in engineering for helping us put those together, and Jacob as well. So for council use, you can see the two layouts that we have. So difficult with the visual aid and presentations with our projector up here and only one TV for use at this point. Limited seating for the citizens, and sometimes when you have to spill out into the lobby, it's really, really tough. They can't see you. It's really hard for them to hear. So that's kind of a difficult situation with our current layout. Of course, the dais, it kind of creates that challenge by you can't move it, it's there, so really your usable space is kind of just this half the room, which leads to that idea of being crowded when we do try to sit a lot of people in here. And then also the cumbersome access and ADA accessibility. Any questions on that?
Questions?
Any comments?
Good.
And then when we go to the court setup, this is how the court currently looks, and you can kind of see with the jury trial and on a regular court day. So these are some of the challenges that we collected from the court. So it's sort of an awkward interface with the judge in the courtroom with where Judge Rufano is set up. Lack of personal space between the defendant and staff, and that kind of also gets into those safety concerns, I think, because of the spatial arrangement there. Of course, functional challenges, again, still there. And then especially when you have that jury trial, the jury is up on the dais, so it's not ADA compliant, and then so when they have to come in and out of the room, that can be, you know, an issue there. The interactions, just based on where they're all seated, is sort of awkward. And then also the audio recording does not meet the requirements of trial court, so the way we're currently set up really isn't functional for a court setting. All right, was there anything you wanted to add to that in your current challenges?
No, thank you. Covered pretty much everything.
Yes. Councilmember Kipp, the next was six-member juries.
correct.
All right, is that the limit, or do we have to plan for 12?
Ms. Manager, Christmas Manager, you get a 6-person jury, but you can also request to see an alternate or two, so it can be between 6 to 8, depending on the length of the trial and things like that.
So we have to take into account the alternates, in this case, if you're sitting out in the audience. And
at this point, yes. Okay. Actually, I think we have room for one alternate.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to start looking at some changes. So the alternative two, again, just looking at the AV. So we have a new audio system with completely wireless microphones that we can use in other locations if you have a traveling meeting, enhanced amplification, and it would also kind of remove a lot of this wiring that you see around the room. And new visual system, so removing the projector, and then we've added fixed mobile TV screens so that the council and the audience could see the same thing at the same time. And then we begin, as I said, to utilize more of the wireless laptops instead of having them chained to the dais, things like that. So it just makes the room a little bit more movable. And we could use all of those purchases in future alternatives. And then just another reminder about the timeline. We could do this within 3 to 4 months. And the estimated cost for just the AV upgrades is $45 to $65. And that is going out to, we did get those quotes from actually having an outside person come in and kind of give us an idea of what the space would need. So that's not just our projections. We got a little help from the outside.
Councilmember Kimball, does that include, when we're talking the fixed mobile TV screens, does that include the video conferencing?
In what way?
Well, I'm just bringing up as a part of the package option, I would just think that we would want to integrate when we're looking at that, the ability, because we have people dial in, you know, attorneys, realtors, you know, different things, that to have that ability for a video conference would be extremely beneficial, especially sometimes we can't get our attorney here.
We'll look into the price, because I can understand that that would be a value for other purposes too, not just for counsel.
Yeah, and there is a little range there, so we did try to go at the top end on that one too, so that maybe if there were some things you could add in like that, it does kind of relate to that.
Anything further, Councilmember Hanford? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. When you say add TV screens, like where, practically where are you, what will you be adding in this room?
Yeah.
The current setup.
Jacob, did you want to speak to that a little bit more? Well, that's in the next. That's not changing the current layout.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So essentially, the areas we're looking at based on what we're talking about now are over where the projector screen is now, behind Councilmember Kovacs' head, and then somewhere in these areas here, so that everyone in the room has a clear view.
So you're talking 4 screens?
Yeah.
Just flat on the wall?
Yeah, back there we were thinking flat on the wall, and then up here we were going to do some mitigating based on what we decided to do with the platform, not platform. It really depended on how this turned out, where exactly it would be positioned.
Councilmember Kent?
Wouldn't you want to put one here?
Well, if the room is oriented this way,
but
you're jumping ahead.
Yeah. You know what? Let's go with Liz for a minute.
I actually think if we looked at this current setup, there was some talk about whether we could do the double mounting somewhere in the middle here, or maybe something in front of the fan and then on the other side of the fan. But it would be a little cumbersome, but it's something that we would look into.
Let's remodel. It sounds like the AV changes would be horrible in themselves. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm done. Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember Campbell? Okay. All right. Please continue.
Sure. And then just to call out that the drawbacks, of course, to just doing alternative two is that we don't really address any of the functional issues, especially with the court. So alternative three looks at...
I'm sorry. Do you use television TV equipment?
We use that to screen with it. For interacting with the custody, we use it. They appear via...
So do you require do you require all the TVs around the room for people to see?
No.
And
the curiosity I have, I don't know exactly everything that's going to be considered here, but it might be something that would be useful in jury trials when we're doing exhibit demonstrations. Mm-hmm. If it's something that can be hooked in, but that's not something that's really
big issue for the court. Just hearing it as an email, that might be.
Thank you.
I'm glad to answer questions.
All right, alternative three is the alternative which eliminates the permanent platform and just goes to a flat floor space. And therefore, we could have many different arrangements based on just moving our furniture and our chairs. We'd like to point out that, again, these are to scale, and these are just ideas. So these are just some ideas of some layouts that you could accomplish by moving around the furniture and fixtures. And it does add quite a bit of capacity. If you remember from the previous slide, we were about 25 people. This takes it up to about 66. And then, of course, you can see that with the functionality of being able to rearrange the room in many, many different formats, you could do many different setups. I will note that even in alternative three, for the court, they would be purchasing a small mobile stage so that even on the flat stage, the judge could be raised because that is something that they value, is having that opportunity. And then, of course, within this layout, you could, this is shown with, of course, you can see kind of a study session layout there, and then a flat layout in for a council meeting, but certainly because of the movability, you could curve that to have a bit more of a curve, but remember, you would be flat on the floor. So again, just looking at the advantages, you'd upgrade the AV, you'd maximize the space, you would have, now this is when we do go to the wall-mounted display, so you can see that here, the TVs would be four TVs, so basically wall, so both council and public would be able to see it depending on how you set up the room. And also, the lines of communication for the courtroom, of course, this is kind of an ideal setup for them just because of the versatility and being able to set up and try out different layouts. Also, because it's on the floor, it's ADA compliant, fits into our campus plan strategy. And then just a reminder that the cost does bump up. So remember, you were at about $60,000. Now you're going up to $120,000 to $160,000. But again, the timeline is relatively small, 4 to 6 months. The drawback here is that there's no permanent platform and limited stage options.
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Is there any history to having the council on a straight line, as per suggested here, along that wall, compared to the current setup or that setup?
I bet you that most people tell you they have different experiences going to different city halls. Normally, the places I've seen, they do have more of a open view, so it's not as much of a horseshoe, but it's much more of a slight curve so that you can see each other in your periphery, but it's more open to the public so that it's more of a face-to-face with your audience.
Okay. I've seen on TV some different other settings, and I've always thought, wow, that's so impersonal for the council meeting to be talking to a council member that's way down the table that you can't see really, or that you can barely see out of the periphery of your vision. So, in my mind, I think that we have a wonderful setup, whether it be the true horseshoe or close to it. And it, to me, it doesn't make sense to change to a straight line when it's our meeting. We're conducting our meeting. We have value being able to see each one of you and see your reactions or not reactions to the topics that we're discussing. And so I don't think that a straight line, I think we're plenty open to the public. And I don't see the benefit of having a straight line or a variably straight line. That's my opinion.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
In conjunction with that thought, would it be part of our possibility if we continued with this setup to take the dais out and put it on the floor so it complies with ADA and achieve that want?
Yeah, so really what you're looking at is just going to this setup, which is what you're at right now. But if you take out all of this platform here, then all of this becomes seating for the public and for staff and for other uses. So, I mean, you can certainly stay in a U formation. And again, that's sort of the idea, is that if it's just furniture and fixtures, you can kind of look at that. And so that would be sort of just looking at, basically, that would be the layout that you're discussing. And you could even, you know, turn it more so that if you, you know, the one nice thing is you do add capacity with your seating. So then even if you were in this layout, you maybe wouldn't be going out into the lobby as much when you have a highly publicized, you know, an item of significance. So maybe you would kind of get away from having that be an issue. But certainly, you know, you could also look at making the U this way and having chairs on either side of you and still being able to face towards the lobby so that if there was any outflow, you would also see those people as well. So there's a lot of options with that.
Anything further, Councilmember Sterber? Okay, Councilmember Cannon.
Thank you. This would eliminate the platform. The only concern I would have with that is visibility. Mm-hmm. Someone sitting in the back of the room, they have to crane around someone else in order to see who's speaking, or so that some item that people are looking at might be an issue. That would be the only reason that I could see going out. I do like the idea that you could open up this room with, if you remove it and allow the chairs to be set up in multiple configurations. Now, the court platform, I mean, that we'd have something in storage?
That would be for any time in court, during court.
Right, but that's what I was thinking. Yeah, so
every Wednesday, every second court, Tuesday.
Well, we have you'd have to have storage for whether the platform is where it's being put.
Yeah, and I mean, if you've seen any of those kind of mobile stage risers, I think Jacob looked a little bit at some options, and of course, if that was the choice, we'd look a little further into that, bring back some details to try to get one that best met the needs.
Okay.
But they do kind of fold up, and you can put them away in a space.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And I'm going to ask the judge a question. Why is it the platform is necessary for the court?
It serves two purposes. One is, generally speaking, the people that I am seeing may have an issue with authority anyway, and you want to establish immediately that there's, if you are in a position of authority, it's also a safety issue. That step removed puts me in a position where it's harder for them to get to me, so that it's also a security issue. But generally speaking, it's just that you set the decorum for the room immediately. When they walk in the door, you're the judge. But one thing I was going to just say, I had my hand up, if you don't mind if I kind of go off topic.
If we can come back to that. One of the concerns that I have with staff is that we'll have another design here that shows one of the mobile platform for council. When running a meeting, if we're all on the same level as the audience, it's a little bit more challenging, I think, for the mayor to be able to see what's going on in the audience. There are times where somebody might be raising their hand but not all the way up and things like that. I find that it's useful. Like right now, I can't see Becky, but if I were up like this, I could see Becky back there better. So just some things to think about. You can see a price difference. Yes, you can get more people in the room without a platform. There is a mobile platform you're going to take a look at, but I'd like for council to really consider some of the things that I'm saying, that I think that there's some benefit to being a little bit elevated, whether or not the council feels that that's worth the change in price and also the loss of space, and as a policy and a budgetary choice of the council. But for some of the same reasons that you brought up, there are times where we may have people that it's just better for us to be on level with the person that's talking from the podium rather than having people look down or us not be able to see what's going on in the back of the room. So that was one of the concerns I raised with staff, but we wanted to invite all options so the council could, you know, have deliberation over it. With that, Judge.
It does actually follow up with that. I've been to both Lake Forest Park and Edmonds. They hold their courts out of their city campuses as well. And Edmonds is a flat with a permanent low arch dais that they have, or it's flat, no dais, so just a flat arch seating for their council, not the U-shape. Mount Lake Terrace is raised. And just the observations of the two, Edmonds is a larger space than Mount Lake Terrace, but it's also, if you're towards the back of the room, you really do have a hard time even knowing who's speaking. Whereas in Lake Forest Park, when I was there, it was a packed room, but you could see up onto the court easily. You knew what was happening and you were able to distinguish. And so that's just something to take into consideration. I know Lake Forest Park does their council, I think they videotape it, and so you can stream it if you wanted to see how their council meetings look from the, I think, the audience perspective. And don't know if Edmund says that or not. That's something, just an option for you guys if you want to do like a little field trip and go see how things look, kind of get a feel of it. But that's my observations from those terms as courtrooms.
Thank you, Judge. Anything further? Okay, Councilmember Scarborough.
This morning, your next slide is going to show an option of having the picture on the top left with a slight horseshoe for the council and raised.
Yes.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough,
you told the secret.
It doesn't have a slight horseshoe, right?
But you could,
yeah. The county council has a very slight bow to it. I mean, it's like this. So the council members, they still need to lean over to see one another, but there's a little bit of a curve to it. And one of the things, the straight versus a curve, as a mayor, it makes my job a lot easier if I've got somewhat of a curve, not only for the reasons the council member Hanford raised, but also to be able to call on people and whatnot. It just makes my life a little easier to see people's faces. This sharp of a horseshoe, I don't know, is necessary, but having some sort of a curve was something I was concerned about. Councilmember Scarborough, anything further? Okay, anything else on this slide? Okay, thank you all very much. Let's go ahead with what you've got.
Well, you ruined my...
Alternative four would be the exact same. So you'd go to a flat space, but now we would also purchase a mobile stage unit in order to utilize that for council as well. So really what you would gain here is more versatility by having the mobile stage. And when we did look at, or when we continue, if you were wanting to select this alternative, we would look at what types of stages they have. So again, these are just kind of some representation of what we would see and the ramps and one potential setup. But certainly we could look at getting a more curved stage or stage that would kind of fit together in more of a curve. And then we would not have, again, just remember, not a permanent dais, but we would have movable furniture. So basically, you could definitely have a raised setting when you had a regular meeting, and then when you had a study session, you could go down to a floor. And then, of course, you could completely clear out the space and have a completely open room. And also, the court would have pretty much the same setup, although it does sound like the court would maybe move things around. Maybe they would even have, you know, this more towards this end, but then it does make a much larger space for them, and then gives her that safety egress out, which was one of the considerations there. So the judge is quite excited to try some different layouts and see what worked best for the space. So that really kind of does the best of both worlds. The slight variance there is, yes, the stage itself adds about 40 to 50,000 to get the mobile stage unit. And again, that's just the best guess estimate from what we've looked into to this point. So if you're interested in that, we would definitely look a little further into that and the options as far as getting something that could curve and maybe fit together. And then, of course, they're pieces, so they fit together. So if you also had an event where you wanted to have, say, an open house and you wanted to use curved stage pieces in each corner and have, you know, set up in the corner for different pieces, you know, kind of give you that flexibility for open meetings, things like that. So that's pretty much the only drawback to this one that we could really come forward with was the cost of the mobile stage. So again, 50 to 60 from the last piece, but you keep all the versatility.
Okay, and is there an alternative five versus the last five?
There is an alternative five.
Okay, and is that the fixed stage?
Yes, sir.
Okay, perfect, because I saw down there it says four fixed stage, so good. All right, Councilor Server.
More steer your thunder,
Is there another slide that's going to tell us that we already have this money budgeted, or is it going to tell us where we need to go find it, or that we need to go find it?
Sure. The slide is actually named Becky Hassert, and she has all of it. So when we're ready to consider alternatives, and if there is one that you fancy, we can definitely turn in that way. But I have heard on good authority that this would be potentially doable. Each alternative is potentially doable. We wouldn't have brought that forward unless we got this feasible.
Councilor Scarborough, if I remember correctly, we at least had some money in the budget to do this a couple years ago.
We did.
And one of the things that I hesitated about at the time in proceeding with it is that the council had been talking about doing a partnership with the school district and the community college, doing brand new city hall. I saw the work that kept occurring in the back here. I kind of likened it to a treehouse when I was a kid, where we kept adding things to the treehouse, knowing that the end game is we need to do a major remodel or a tear down, rebuild, or move into the shop there. And I wanted to have this conversation with the council before we invested another, you know, $170,000. For 210 into this, so that's where we're having the conversation right now. Okay.
Good.
Anything further from council? Fritz, go ahead and.
Okay.
Oh, I do have one question. Let's go back. So the width, the depth of the stage, so from the north wall to the south, does it really need to be that deep, or can it be wound back?
So this would be dependent on what we did purchase. However, you have to remember that you will have space for your tables and chairs, and you will want to be able to pull your chair out and also pass behind each other. So I think that the depth was about 8 feet that was recommended.
Okay.
So if you visualize that, that's what we would look at. Certainly, if you curve it a little bit, you're going to lose a little space on the sides, but I still think you're gaining a lot of capacity and you have the flexibility of the layout. So again, if you have to spill out into the audience, but you were sort of all facing this way a little more, you have that capability.
Okay, sounds good. Let's go ahead and move on to the next slide.
Okay. So unfortunately, we didn't have time to put together the schematics, but this option would be talking about that new fixed platform. So basically, that's the platform that would run the entire north wall. And really, the advantages are pretty much the same. The drawbacks, though, they change. So again, you're still going to have the same cost as a mobile stage, so $50,000 to $60,000 to put in a new fixed stage. But you do lose that flexibility piece. And you have more condensed layouts because you can't, you know, do much once you have that in there with the extra space. And then I would say that in talking with the judge, she did have some comments on, because she would not necessarily want that layout, she would still have to, you know, have a setup with a mobile stage at the other end potentially. So that might be a little troublesome for the court setup. Judge, if you wanted to speak to that.
Well, my primary concern was the way that I saw the, and you can go back to the...
Yeah, so it's basically, this would be permanent.
Right, and my concern with the one with the way the court was set up there is, if it's a regular court day, that audience are my defendants. And as you see, my defendants are now essentially blocking my emergency exit if something happens. And that immediately jumped out at me. And the other concern that was raised, actually, that I showed it to the prosecutor, was, and I think a valuable one, the jury is not going to want to walk winding through the defendants, the witnesses, etc. We're going to probably want to put the jury on the wall, on the same wall as the door, so that, because jurors tend to feel like they're on the bubble all the time.
So if you thought about this, sort of turned a little.
Turn it, and then where you have the audience listed on the left down there, that would be where the jury would probably be on the wall there. Actually, if we don't have the raised platform, they would be over to that side of the door.
So really the difference there with the court is that you know, they lose as much flexibility to change around that space, right, on what kind of day they have if you put in any sort of fixed platform. So that's why we wanted to bring forward all those alternatives.
Councilor,
on the open floor, the flat floor seating, you said the capacity was 66. What is it on with the raised stage?
whether it's fixed or not.
It just goes down about, I think I roughly estimated it a little bit more towards like 45-ish.
And that includes the council members, includes everybody who's in the room, or is,
I think the audience space
is just the audience would be about 45.
Yes.
And then the other one. And then the other one would be 66 just for the audience.
Yeah, I believe that when it says 66, that's full capacity. And Jacob, you kind of came up with those numbers.
Okay,
the capacity of the room doesn't actually change based on the layout. Capacity. What the ones that reference that it achieves maximum capacity means that we basically were able to fit enough chairs in the room to hit capacity.
Yeah.
So if it doesn't reference that, then it means that it's less than. I didn't actually say those numbers.
Yeah, the 66 includes everybody in the room.
Correct.
Yes. So with the flat space, because and even with the mobile stage, with the layout options, you can fit more seats in.
Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford and Councilmember Scarlett.
Okay. So we're at the end. This is where you want input.
Not quite yet.
Oh, you want more.
No, I know you're super excited.
Councilmember Sherber?
So, Jess, your concern with this setup on the bottom right is primarily emergency egress and jurors.
And I'm also looking at the number of seats there and concerned about when we have a heavy pretrial calendar if we're going to have enough room for everyone. But that's something we could work with. That looks more like it's set up for trial as opposed to if we're set up for an everyday work experience.
That's an adjustment to the door.
That's my escape door right now. But I really like the
I think we should have a drop. We can have an underground path.
There we go.
I'm sure that would cost very much money. Okay, so going back to our initial consequence table, this is now a ranked table. So basically, we took all the data that we had and we ranked it 1 to 5, 1 being the most favorable, 5 being the least favorable based on our values. And in doing so, if something was tied, they all got the same number, and then of course you went on to the next ranking. So this just kind of looks head-to-head, ranking them 1 to 5. And then the bottom is just looking at the average rank. So here's where you can kind of see that if these are the right objectives, if we're meeting the right values, and this is how they rank, just right up against each other, side to side, you can see that you have alternative 3 being 1.4, so that would be your most favorable option based on this matrix. And alternative 4, which is the one with the full mobile stage, is 1.5. And really, the only difference between the two is the price. So the 1.4 to 1.5 ranking change is really just the price. And then your next alternative would be to do the new permanent platform at 2.3. So again, this is just assuming that these are the right measurements that you want to consider with the rankings. And that's just for your consideration of putting them head to head.
And I want to be very clear and underscore this. This is a very pragmatic staff set of criteria. This doesn't reflect the users, so the council members, the judge, the mayor. You don't need to be tied by the numbers that are there. And we even talked a little bit about potentially adding in a row that that had council, mayor, judge. But I don't want you to be attached fully to the numbers that are there. And we're not, staff isn't trying to tell you that you need to go with 1.3 or 1.4. This is just their review based on the staff or something. Councilmember Starlin.
I like a lot of the mobile setups. However, two considerations. One is storage, as some people have brought up, and the other is the amount of time and labor it takes to have somebody come set it up for this or that or whatever. And having council every Tuesday and court every Wednesday, I think you're going to have considerable labor costs from somebody in the public works or
whatever you call it, grounds and maintenance, spending time hauling it in, hauling it out, and storing it. I mean, it's not like the mobile stage we got for pulling over to the park, pulling a button, and having it pop up like a transformer. I'm talking about something, I think, a little more labor intense. So those things I would think you might want to quantify for us before we make some sort of decision, or tell us what your views as the people at the city hall are going to have to find the time and the money and the people to do that, as opposed to having something of a permanent state. I like the idea of this, but that doesn't fix the court side. I like the idea of that having a little bit of a curve at least, so it can be seen. I kind of like to see. You like the exit? I do too. but I also like to face the door. Mm-hmm. I feel on that side. I'm looking at the door up there. I don't know what's coming. I mean, I can see this is this is the background. And if I'm sitting up there, I can see all the way down the end of that hall when something starts coming this way that I don't want. Here, I can't see it until I come around the corner, and I'm not comfortable with that, but I can live with it. And I like the judge, I like knowing where the exits are. I know the exit. There's only one exit, and if I'm a junior guy, I probably have one to see him. So it's a long way to any exit here on that configuration, but you can't have everyone. But those are just some thoughts
on that. We're putting you close to the door based on your experience.
Yeah. Okay, so I think Jake is able to answer a couple of questions. Jake, if you're going to come up with an answer,
yes, sure.
A couple of questions that I have. One, could the stage be dual purpose? Could we come up with an option that's dual purpose that works both for the judge and also for counsel? And if we could get away with not having to move the stage from counsel to jury, to the day when you have court day, how often would you actually need to move the stage?
So I think some of what goes into that discussion with Council Member Scarborough was talking about, which you're talking about also, Mr. Mayor. The stages today are entirely mobile. A long time ago, when I lived far, far away, I worked for a university on the east side of the state in God's country. And this was back in the 90s. And we had mobile stages, and they had wheels on them. And one of my roles there was to actually set up and take those down. They're very versatile, very mobile, and to be configured in almost any means or manner that the city would choose to order. Of course, customizing, as Liz said, costs money. So that's why that estimate is a little bit at the higher reaches of what one might expect for that sort of product. But kind of looking at that, we were thinking, well, there might be this discussion going on of we would prefer to have it like this and then like that. You are correct, though. It would take more labor. My expectation is that we would be able to find a way to make these work around the periphery of the room, with perhaps they would typically come with skirting and some other things we could do to mask them. So whether we end up, over here or back in these nooks between the bricks here, I think when we're using some of them, but not all of them, we could potentially keep them in the room, which would be ideal because it saves that labor cost. And on top of that, we are here, and Liz is actually here sometimes as well, helping setting up this room for various meetings throughout the week anyhow. That's part of our normal process of doing things. So there's it is more. I can't say exactly how much because we haven't done it yet.
I don't really know how much I need to know, but I don't want to vote for something that sticks you and all that guy with something there much.
Yeah. So that was something we could
do. I want to sit on that wall.
Yeah. Again, by the door.
So instead of calling Councilmember Hanford, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So can you talk, and this is probably with the next item on the agenda, but can you talk about the timing of the shop compared with this? Because
So we're moving there. We're moving there, yeah, exactly. We wanted to present you with these short-term solutions with the idea that these could all be done within the next 4 to 6 months, and then look at a long-term solution, which as you're going to see is actually going to be a multi-year kind of faceted. So really, that would be a few years down the road if you chose to continue on that path. But these are things that we could do now, especially to alleviate some of the stress on the court. So
that's why we kind of divided them up into short term, we could do this now, and then long term solutions. So if you're ready, I can take you to the next step, which
so
is.
Before we move from this, does anybody have any questions about the short term strategies right now? Okay. You still have the floor, Councilor Hanford. Do you have anything else? You ready to?
No, I want to hear the Kevin. Final comment.
All right. Sure. So this is just getting to the policy question that we're here to talk to you about tonight is, are you interested in pursuing a short-term solution? And we have on here, if you're not interested, then really you're selecting number one, do nothing, save the status quo. If you are interested in moving forward, you have alternatives 2, 3, 4, and 5. Again, 2 is just the AB, 3 is going to the flat space. 4 is adding in a mobile stage to the flat space, and 5 is adding in a new platform against the north wall.
New being permanent.
Permanent, unmovable. So that is your discussion point.
Okay. Councilmember Camp, and then Councilmember Scarborough. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to make sure I understand the timing correctly.
Okay.
So we make a decision tonight, and it takes 4 to 6 months to redo the room or whatever we decide we're going to do. So we're going to be someplace else for meetings, right?
Yeah. So the idea would be is if you're ready to move forward with a solution, we estimate that the actual construction piece from beginning to end, but how long we would actually need to be out of this room, that would be part of our planning process and also coming up with a strategy for if we needed to be out of this room, where we would be and how long that would be.
Okay, so I'm not too worried about where we're going to be. Just we're going to be out of this room for 4 to 6 months.
I wouldn't say 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
I think that's the entire project from
beginning to end. For more than a month and less than a year.
Fair enough.
Now, we move back into the room. How long are we in the room in the new configuration before we're over in the barn?
Years.
Years and years?
Yes.
Years. So this is a solution that's going to last for some time, that we're going to be stuck with for some time.
That would be correct based on our projections.
Okay. Thanks. Now I have a better picture of what we're looking at. Personal opinion, I like alternative 4. I think it's the best bang for the buck. I think it addresses your issues. I know it addresses my issues, or at least I believe it will, with the ADA concerns I've had for this room. And either way, in terms of curvature, I can go. I like seeing your faces. There are some days I don't like seeing your faces. But for the most part, it's worked.
Yeah.
It's worked. It's been 6 years. Come on. So anyway, so I would go for alternative 4. That would be my choice.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough and Councilmember Hanford. Councilmember Scarborough.
I was going to. I concur with option 4, not for the reason you stated. I would love, though, to see if we do this mobile stage right there on that wall for council, and then the judge would have her set up for differently, but if we do that, to really look at what the angle you get, and I don't think it would cut into really the seating, because so that would be something interesting. What the angle would be if you were really losing seedings. But it would need, in my mind, it would need to definitely come out a way it's not just a very slight curve. I'm not in favor of that.
So not as tight as this, but certainly more of a curve than.
Yeah, oh yeah.
More of a smile.
Smile?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Not a green smile.
Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember Hanford?
No, that's
it. Okay, Councilmember Cutler.
Yeah, 4.
All right. Does anybody object to proceeding with four? You know, we'll have other things, I'm sure, in terms of action and whatnot, but I'm hearing a consensus report. Ms. Link, do you want to talk about what happens next then, or?
For short-term solutions?
Yeah, well, just in terms of bringing this back to council.
Yeah, my thought would be then to go back and refine alternative four and bring that back with some real concepts and authority. My other thought too was to actually lay out on the floor what that smile would look like so you can actually physically see it and ensure that it's enough for you before they go off and do design. I'm sure we've got...
There's some stuff in the way.
Yeah.
But you blew it in. It'll look like someone had to paint the thing.
I mean, we do that in theater. You put your stage on the floor with some tape so that you can kind of see what it would look like.
The other thought I had was that the company that we're purchasing this from probably has the software once they can actually show us what that looks like.
Point of clarification before we go through with that process is the desire then for the council members to be able to comfortably see each other as well as the audience. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair way to put that?
Better,
you don't have to crane your neck, but yet at the same time you're still facing the audience of the meeting. Is that a fair kind of...
My smile isn't technical.
Well, I just want to... If I have to explain this to someone who's doing it up on software, I'm going to be able to say something that's a little more technical than this.
Well, I'm learning.
That's why we do learn.
Judge Islano?
I actually was behind Councilman, but I have a question, and it's just kind of tossing the fly in the ointment, but if you curve from, say, where the Washington flag is around and use that corner, that might address putting the court up there and having our court this way and council as an option.
Yes.
Something to think
about.
That's true.
That's true. And we can let it there.
And mobile, then we can figure out if it doesn't work. We can create
We can use a portion of the corner, is what you're saying.
Goes along with my comment. It seems with the number of 10 seats up there, we don't need that long of a walk. There might be some pretty dense waste of space in the key corner.
Well, and just a reminder, we will have a ramp. That if there's any sort of mobile stage whatsoever, there will be an ADA accessible ramp to that stage, so that will take up some space on one of the ends.
You're sitting at the base of the ramp in one of the...
I saw it in the picture.
The other thing too, in terms of space, having a little bit of space is sometimes good. It's like you all are probably on top of one another with your stuff sometimes. So that's one of the problems I have up there right now. It would be nice to have just a little bit more room to put paper down and whatnot from time to time. Okay, Judge Rosano, did you have anything further?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, we'll bring back more information. What's next?
Well, thank you very much. That finishes my portion of the presentation today.
Well done.
Thank you.
Are we still on the discussion items?
Yes, you are, because now, dun-dun-dun.
I'm back.
Okay. So, we still have on the agenda discussion item number 4, which is AB 18-55. We're going to kind of monitor the time as we get closer to 9, and it may be that we look at scheduling another time to have that conversation. So let's go ahead and continue with AB 18-024, Part 2, City Hall Alternatives, I suppose.
Man, I was excited to knock this out like I'm in the 30 in the news. I'll do the best I can to slow down.
The hard part is over.
Yeah, exactly. So as Liz talked about this room, we're now going to move on to what we started the evening with, which was the shop out there and potentially the growth of the city. So essentially, City Hall, which is the building we're all in, is near capacity within our current layout. Yes, there are other alternatives out there for increasing our staffing space. But as we grow as a city, which we are, I think we have about 800 lots-ish, Mr. Swanson, in development right now. That's going to, our need for services is going to go up, which requires people. That's just the bottom line. So we're going to need some spaces. So what do we do with this? Where do we go? How do we be strategic about our next steps and our plan? Another side note, which I thought was interesting, I actually took an inventory of our meeting rooms. We really don't have that many. It's shocking. So this is one of two meeting locations that hold more than roughly 8 to 10 people. You probably have been in the public works conference room back there. That's probably our next biggest public space. And then the other one is the police department training room, which generally isn't the place where homeowners associations and community groups and things like that are going to be getting together. It just doesn't fit with the theme of the police department. So. Long-term solutions. So, as always, we have the continue as-is option. That is, as-is, where-is, since we've essentially started to move forward with making some changes to this room, so it's sort of as-is. Another option we have is remodel existing spaces. So, with the public works shop being built and public works moving into that new structure sometime in early 2019, that's going to open up some vacant real estate out there, which we looked at. And a third option is to do some hybrid version of that, or just to construct a standalone municipal services building, which is actually what the campus plan suggests we do from back in 2008. So we have some options there, and they really are cost and space determinative. So continue current use of existing spaces. So essentially, if we're coming out of the council chambers here, that's the pedestrian entrance that we went into. So we have some potential to work with that space and grow it and use it as a more pedestrian-friendly centralized entrance. Here's the public entrance to the police department. So it could work where City Hall could have a public entrance here and the council chambers and court could be here, all in this kind of section of the campus. There's the shop space. There's this alley port that I talked about where we park the plows, and then also that's the water park storage shop, which is there total, all told. That adds up to a little less than 10,000 square feet. So some kind of hypothetical, we'll call it a bubble or a squish diagram that we put together just as a, you know, what needs to go in this space if we do happen to choose to remodel or use this option. Public restrooms, obviously, staff and junior restrooms, so separate spaces. Right now, I believe, Judge, those are combined, which is not good.
It can lead to problems.
Yeah, technical, not good.
Sorry, that's legal speak.
Yeah, sure. It's undesirable, however.
Yeah.
So, court administration and a payment area, the executive session and meeting room could be here adjacent to what could be the council chambers and courtroom. There's space for a jury, a judge's office, and then a fair amount of space for additional administrative offices. Obviously, these bubbles could be moved in any form or fashion, if that makes sense, and that's something that would, as we move forward with this plan, we would hire some very seasoned professionals, not named Jake, to go ahead and put those types of things together and determine and meet our needs by asking us what we need. So this is just, like I said, it's a hypothetical. The potential for phasing here, it could go anywhere from 5,600 square feet, which is just solely the shop, up to 9,200, which includes all three of the structured spaces that are there right now, and then it also includes up to 6,100 square feet of exterior space, depending on how we chose to approach that exterior space, whether we just want to slap a sidewalk through the middle of it, or do we want to make it more of a, let's go, big grand mall type entrance.
Can you orient me by telling me where we are now?
Oh, yeah. So in this image, we are right about there.
Okay.
So here's the, this is the edge of the police department right here. Here's the entrance where you go to the offices, and then here's the back entrance. Does that make sense?
That's the building we walked into, and then the Joe's door right there.
Yeah, the first one. So moving forward, if... the 2008 plan called for a new municipal building of about 44,000 square feet to house all of the city services. That includes the police department. So I think that's really important to say. The remodel component that we're bringing up as an opportunity here includes keeping the police department where it currently is. And it is also worthy of note that when the city public works, basically staff and shop materials and the places where we do our facilities maintenance and things of that nature moves, the police department is going to be picking up that bank of buildings that's over there, which is quite a fair amount of square footage. So their evidence room is going to move into there and some other storage areas and some the impound yard is going to move. And so the growth that's there, the expansion is there for the police as they grow a bigger agency to serve our folks is available on campus right now. Yes, sir.
Chief, question for you. Is there a need for your police officers to have personalized cages to hold their gear?
They have, you mean in the in building? They have lockers right now.
How big? I mean, this is a locker.
That's it.
This is a cage. So is there a need there for you to have different amounts of units?
Probably not. Right now, they carry most of the extra gear and they're moving cars.
So the campus plan, included demolishing current facilities and constructing the building on site. So that would be scrapping what we're in and starting fresh. That also included originally the Bread Strand shop and those structures as well. So really the way this is set up is it's do nothing, do this or do that. I don't know that we can necessarily do both. We could do a hybrid version of them depending on the desire of the council. So the campus plan also, the campus plan also needs to be updated as growth has occurred in the past 10 years. So we are operating a little differently than we anticipated a decade ago. And I think that what we've done thus far is reflective of that. I also think that this potential move, whichever way we decide to go, should be reflective of that as well. So here's the policy question. This should look really familiar from the earlier section where we were talking about just this room. Would council like to move forward with pursuing a longer term solution? If no, obviously alternative one, do nothing. So, yes, sir.
Councilmember Sturber.
When we talk about long term, we talk about building our own new city hall. There's somewhere in this presentation we're going to talk about joint custody of that city hall with the school district and or do we want to start looking at offering the post office a new place to go?
No, that's not part of this presentation right now. Okay.
So I will add to that. I had a discussion with the school district earlier this week just to touch on that because I anticipated that might be a question. It didn't sound as though the school district board had an intent to pursue the joint resolution that the city and the school district agreed upon many years ago. It didn't sound like that was in the future plans for them. He didn't say no, but he also didn't say yes. So alternative two would be to remodel the existing spaces. So that's some version of what we've talked about this evening as far as the shop goes. And then alternative three is to construct a new municipal services building per council's recommendation. So looking at those from a cost perspective, the shop only would be somewhere between an estimated rough order, 1.7 to 2 million. The shop plus the pedestrian entrance, so if we went to something a little bit more inviting for the public, would be somewhere between 2.6 and 3.4 million. The shop plus the pedestrian and the admin, the shop plus the admin space, so that would be the offices in the back, would be somewhere in the 2.8 to 3.9 million range, and then the shop pedestrian entrance at the whole ballpark would be somewhere in the range of 3.7 to 4.8. Now, keeping in mind those are obviously rough order estimates, that's stuff I put together based on current construction costs and working with our contractor that is building our shop structure right now, trying to get the best guess estimate of what things are going for. So, mayor and staff recommendation is to move forward with council, including this in the strategic plan.
Councilmember Sturber.
So alternative four is building a new building.
Oh, alternative three is
building three.
Yes, sir.
So it's demolish and rebuild.
Start.
And that's a 3.1?
No, I actually didn't give you a price for that one.
I didn't think 3.1 something
to
do that.
Yeah, best guess, somewhere between $20 and $30 million. That's pretty wild. Yeah, that's a difficult thing to quantify.
Councilmember Kent,
could you go through those numbers again? Because I got confused as well. I thought alternative three was.
Yeah, let me unhide that slide. If I can do that. Right from here?
Yeah, just
right
question.
I don't
know. I need to go to the.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's what I just said with there.
So, So, briefly, the pedestrian, changing the shop location, you're changing pedestrian entrance, and when you're remodeling all the offices, you're just cutting the interior and reallocating them? Or? I caught what you said before, but I think I missed
Okay.
how the
Can you go back to the bubble?
You could, but I think I can get where you want to go with this. I think I understand what you're asking.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, do you understand it?
So what I think we want to do is break down Alt 2 remodel, just understanding their shop only is this, shop head plus entrance, shop head plus offices. The offices are internal to this building. We're trying to get that breakdown on what's...
And I understand the shop, but that's really just the offices. So essentially, basic frame or structure of the building stays the same.
Yeah.
You gut the interior and rebuild of the office.
Yeah, so this building.
Those structures, so that's the clarification
there,
right?
I knew we'd get there eventually.
Okay.
So yeah, we're talking about that area out there.
Okay.
So there's really not a lot to cut, honestly. It's just a shell, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah,
so let me ask a follow-up question to that then. Thank you. We'll let the record show the council member cut it back as left. So alternative three, new municipal building, that's under the understanding that the shop would go, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be demo this, demo the shop, rebuild the structure.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. Councilmember Kim, did you have anything further?
I think I'm...
Councilmember Hanford?
I'm close to getting it. So, the other alt two, the shop plus the admin offices, you're talking about everything out there. What's going to go on in the current facility then?
I think what goes on in here is probably predicated by what we choose to do out there, and then also pursuing what is on the next slide there, a facility report for the shop and city hall, which we could do in 2019. So I think that taking that into consideration, we would need to look at the bigger picture of how all the parts and pieces fit together in order to determine what we need to do with each.
So, Councilmember Ginsburg, this building has leaks in it. When you go to attract staff, this is something we don't talk about. When you go to attract staff, I mean, one of the things you look at is not just the job you're going to do, the community you're going to do it in, but also the space you're going to work in and everything. And I know it seems to me that we've done a lot to try to make everything work. I mean, you've seen what we're talking about doing with this room for improving things for the meeting court and whatnot. We're going through growing pains, and this structure has space issues and also technical facility issues with leaks and things like that. We have a sewer backup twice last, not 2017, but 2016, and backed up twice.
Yeah.
And we actually had staff have to go home because it smelled so badly back in engineering and planning. And I think it also backed up over by the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of problems with this building, and it deserves a look before it deserves some research and trying to figure out how we can fund doing the right thing. Certainly doing what the plan shows, moving into the building next door helps, but you still have facility issues with this structure right here that either need to be repaired or demo and rebuild or something.
Okay, and I agree with you 100%. So, the shop idea, if we were going to go with a new, all three, all new building, all right here, was that even an option that we're going to build a shop out so that we can kind of operate there while this is all being built? Or is that a completely different track?
I don't think we have the footprint for that.
Okay.
It would be pretty difficult. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So then, okay, that helps clarify in my mind.
Yeah.
The whole all two and all three. So then my next question is for all three, which in my mind, that's what the last time we talked, that's been the plan, that's what we need to do. What's the plan to, and I thought Brad had presented the plan, that if we did all three, we did it in sections or something, and so we were able to operate in one part of the...
Which what happened is, when after the shop moved, the new shop was built, the West Wing people moved into the two trailers that are out there, plus a third trailer that was brought on site.
Mm-hmm.
And then that half of the building, the new building was built, and then everybody moved over and was cozy in that half, while this half was been built.
Okay, yeah.
And then the trailer's on line.
So then there's a plan there.
Yeah.
So can you do me a favor, go back to the, you had a slide that showed what the recommendation was.
Yeah, that's four.
Oh,
hey, one too many. About that one right there.
Yeah, so where we, kind of where my head is, when I was serving as a council member, we talked all the time about needing to replace this building. And, you know, we're talking 10, 15 years ago, we're talking population size 15,000 or so. We're now at 18,300. We're a growing community. We've got a court here that we didn't have before. We've got you know, people coming in on court day, intermingling with people trying to pay utility bills. You've got people that want to smoke and whatnot, and they're out there in the rain. It's getting really busy in here. I think doing the improvements in here will help, but I don't like just doing plans and having them sit on a shelf. So if the council is committed to wanting to do something, I think the mayor and staff recommendation is a good way to go, which is do what is listed there. But I want to make certain that everybody's looked at the numbers and is comfortable with an understanding of what it means to fund the building. I want to stay focused. One of the things that I had issues with when I first came in here was trying to work with the community college and the school district and knowing that they've got different funding sources, different legislative bodies, different needs and everything. And if we're going to go down this path of looking at demoing the structure and building something new, I just want to make sure that there's a commitment from the legislative body, because this will take a couple to a few years to go through the process, and I want to be able to stay focused and not have staff start down this rabbit hole and then all of a sudden that doesn't work and so on. So to me, this is a pretty important conversation, and we can certainly bring it back, but this is important. So. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So the timeline that you got there are for alternatives 2 and 3, 1 through 6.
Yes. Well, but that?
Well, you've got dates, you've got years on it. So is it for alternative 2 and 3 that this would be planned?
That's about appropriate. And obviously, alternative 3 is going to take a little bit longer because we are...
For completion, I understand.
Correct, yes.
But in essence, let's just say that construction would start 2022 to 2023.
Yeah.
But basically, this would be the timeline for either alternative 2 or 3.
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I want to make.
Yep. That's where we start.
Well, I think your comments are well taken on... The question is, where's the money coming from? What can the state give us? You're laughing. I don't think it's like a zero.
That's always scary about the finance director.
Yeah. again, taxes, asking the public to fund it, what's it going to cost? You know, the school district, and this is from my time here, have stayed in that old building where they're at because they watched Snohomish vote in a new district office and lose the next 2 operation and maintenance levies because the public went, oh, you got enough money to build you a new house, but you don't have enough money for education. Okay, no money. So I just don't want to put us in a position where we go, we're building up a new house, and the people go, you'll never pass another levy, how do you do it? Just my thoughts. I mean, we're going to have to figure out, and if we decide on option 3, sometimes I understand the need, there's going to be a very concerted public effort to sell the idea of the city house being in.
And like Councilmember Kent pointed out, I think it'd be for alternative 2 or alternative 3. It's, for me, it's a matter of setting on a course of action and being able to get the information together and everything and ultimately make that decision.
Just having to get some more information. That's part of the process. Those would be my concerns. And in 23, they probably won't be my concerns.
Well, and you know, that's also part of the difficulty. This conversation started with that plan we were looking at was from 2008. and it was something that was being
like the highway you bypass.
Well, it was something that was being discussed before 2008 also.
Yeah.
And
you don't need this building as what else?
It's car.
It's a car dealership.
The general owns this building.
70s, 41-ish.
So where I'm going with this is that there are some things that we do that are sort of legacy. None of us may be here in 2023 when a decision is made whether or not to build whatever it is that gets built. And we need to do due diligence, but we need to make certain that whether we're still here or the people that replace us understand that this is of value. And that gets exactly what you were saying, Councilmember Starbuck, which is making certain that we are communicating with the public and making certain that you understand what the need is. And us being humble and flexible enough to understand that maybe our perception was not correct. If something's pointed out that, hey, maybe you don't need this or maybe you don't need that. But I want to be able to stay focused and get the information and run the analysis and everything. Ms. Ang, do you have anything?
I just wanted to reiterate, I think, what you've already said and point out that what we're proposing in the staff recommendation is really a metered movement forward. So at each step of the way, you get more information that allows you then to make the next decision. And really what we're looking for, again, is we're talking about budget and strategy moving forward into 2019. But what you see here is included in the strategic plan, which we're going to begin discussing tonight, then select the short-term solution, which you've provided us with direction this evening, and then complete that facility report for both the shop and the city hall so we know what is the actual fiscal structures that we have and can we do what we want to do with them. And so is it really physically possible to actually remodel the existing building? Because I think that gets back then to the fiscal responsibility that you're raising, which is what is it you need to communicate to members of the public about the facility itself and our ability to either continue operating out of this building or remodeling that into something.
And then to take the flip side is not to understand that I understand, and I'm sure we need to tell the public at some point, you can't follow by building new, by remodeling the shop, by remodeling that, there is a product of diminishing returns. So that's part of it. And there's a line somewhere, and there's a selling point somewhere for that new building.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent?
Thank you. Marginal. Is this being recorded? I'm just curious.
Yes. He said marginal diminishing return.
There we go. That's what I thought it said. Okay. And I'm not throwing a wrench in the works, but have we asked the public what they expect in their city hall? What do they expect when they come to city hall?
I think that would be part of it, yeah.
In reviewing the past history on the 2008 report, there were a number of surveys that were done, statistically valid surveys, and outreach efforts. And that's what informs the 2008 report. Now, that being said, it's a decade since 2008. And so it may be that in looking at completing a facilities report in 2019, maybe the council wants to fund another outreach about what is it the community wants from their city hall. But in my experience, if you're going to do that, you need to attach dollar values to those. Because people will say they want everything until they know how much it costs.
Exactly. And that's why I wanted to make sure that even if we went forward on something with the information we got from 2008, I can't believe that other than maybe having Wi-Fi instead of line telephones into the building, that people will basically be wanting the same types of things. So I think we could probably work forward with those, with the existing information. I just want to make sure that if, like you said, we're not going to polish something, then we need to be able to sell it and explain why it's of benefit to the people of Monroe. And if we have that information on what they expect, we can go forward with that. Anyway, that's it. I'm sorry.
And then, of course, current parcel, what we're talking about here, we're talking about one project out of many things in 6 years of plan that we may or may not get to this evening. The reason why we're having this conversation right now is that we have competing priorities. So whether it's Blueberry and Kelsey or 191st or 522, or it's a park in the downtown, or it's a park improvement there, or City Hall, all of it costs money, and it all competes with different resources. And Councilmember Kim?
I'm just curious whether any low hanging fruit, anything that would have immediate impact that people could see that would not cost us 18 point.
The short term alternative, yeah. Number four, you guys have picked.
Number two,
alternative.
Yeah.
If
there are other items. And that would be something good for consideration.
And I think it's the facilities report, because I think you're going to need that data in order to make an informed decision. So if I may, from a funding standpoint, we have a little bit of opportunity here with regards to the short-term alternative and the facilities report. Real estate excise tax in 17 more than doubled what was anticipated in the budget. That was money that wasn't needed for other projects. And in splitting out REIT 1 and REIT 2, the bulk of that we have sitting in the real estate fund right now is REIT 1, which is eligible to use for the short-term alternative that you guys kind of, if I'm consensus, came up with tonight, as well as the paper facility study, because you can do a plan out of the REIT 1, because I am assuming that a municipal campus is part of our comp plan. The need for municipal campus. So as long as it's part of our current comp plan, it is eligible for REIT 1. And we are sitting on a little bit over $1 million in there that is unencumbered at this point. So.
Thanks. Okay. So does anybody else have any comments on what's up here? Councilor Hanford, Councilor Gamble, I've heard from you too as much on this. Are you supportive of going through the staff recommendation there and doing the work?
You verbalized mine. I mean, this is one of many projects.
Yeah.
So, it's one of many projects. I mean, this is one of those ones that anytime, you know, for an elected who comes, you know, a couple times a week, whatever, as opposed to city and staff that are here every day, it's counter. There's going to be, you know, an automatic, you know, hey, you brought up one, hey, is there stuff going to be right now that's visible, right? You know, that's typically, that's a, you know, North Kelsey, that's a North Blueberry, that's a, you know, the turf fields over at Lake Ty, those are all more visible to every one of us because there's a majority, I would say, of citizens do not come to City Hall, period, ever. Maybe 5%, if that. So that's just some of the stuff we have to take into consideration. You're spot on that. It's not going to be anything we do here, even if it's just rearranging this room, it's not going to be visible to 95 or actually probably 98% of constituents.
Councilor Ranford, do you have anything?
That's what
I said. Okay, sounds good. So, do you have anything else for your presentation?
Sure.
All right, we are at 8:37 right now. We did start today at 5:05. The question is, do we want to continue through with discussion item number 4, which is the 6-year strategic plan discussion, or would we like to schedule that for another day?
I don't know what the schedule is for another day. I have a lot of questions.
Okay, sounds good. Anybody else? Councilor Sherber?
I agree, I just don't know how long the subject this is.
Yeah. I think it could be
a little long.
Yeah, I think it could be, the conversation we had here was only about this room, and I think it took about 45 minutes, and then over there it took about 45 minutes. We're talking about citywide now.
So a couple hours.
Yeah, it could be a couple hour conversation. it would be ideal to have more council members present also, and so if it,
yeah, I could just figure out when to go.
Yeah, and in the meantime, if you have any questions about the six-year plan, please let us know. And it is just a draft. This is an opportunity for discussion. We implement staff now. We implement your policies, your budget. We want to make certain that we understand what your expectations are for 2019 and then future years, so that we can build in that forecast that Ms. Hassett was talking about earlier, and we can build a budget that has the objectives you're looking for in it. Councilor Campbell.
No, and that piece, I go on record, just appreciate on how we're approaching this. I mean, is that because we are, I mean, maybe painstaking, and I get, I could care less about where tables go and stages, and shit, that stuff drives me crazy, but I'm not a details guy. It's good, and it needs to be done, and I appreciate that we're having the conversation and stuff, and then, I hate that we're going to, in June, we go off of, this, and then we're voting on a budget in December. So I appreciate the path that we're on. I think we've got plenty of time to dive into the other topics. So.
Sounds good. Thanks. Anybody else with any comments? All right. Anything
for me? Anything more for me? Other than thank you for coming tonight. It's really helpful, I think, for the staff members that have items particularly on the agenda that we've spent and really to this time to be about the things that have been monthly for a while.
Yeah. And I think the staff that came here this evening, I know that a lot of the staff members that are here were here for, to contribute to the 6 year. I hope that you've benefited from the conversation this evening, and we'll have them back again for the next 6 year discussion. Councilor Reno.
I did want to say, because we do need to do something. I just think we need to really realize what the headwinds that we're really up against. And I think we'll see it in the context of all the other stuff that needs to be done in the 6 year in the plan, and the fact that we have not done any maintenance on roads, or there's so many other things. So we talk about how dire the situation is, and we talk about the building and stuff backing up. There's a lot of different areas that we have the same issues. But for all the staff in the room, I don't think there's any single one of us that doesn't disagree that we need to do something.
And there's only so much money.
That's correct.
All right. Anything else we're going to do with this? Can we have any other business this evening? Is there a motion to adjourn? Second. Right. A motion to adjourn from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Hanson, and a discussion on the motion to adjourn. Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes 4-0. Thank you very much.
Appreciate you.